You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 434 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the 2-0 Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
The NFC West leading Seattle Seahawks. Seattle, by the way, also the home of Felix Hernandez and the Seattle Mariners. It's the Felix edition of the Pelton Cast. And
there we go.
The Mariners, for once, paid tribute to Felix, not by losing a game where their starting pitcher pitched well and did not get any run support, but on Sunday by throwing a game with the minimum 27 batters for the first time since Felix's perfect game.
And also paying tribute to Felix Hernandez's career by not making the playoffs.
Oh, by having their season almost certainly end in disappointment. Well, we will get there. But off the top, we should toast, you mentioned 2-0. Congrats to Mike McDonald, the first coach in Seahawks history.
Wow.
To win his first two games as head coach. Pete Carroll didn't do it. Mike Holmgren didn't do it. Mike McDonald has them all beat through two games.
He's that guy.
Should we start by recapping
the banner
this weekend in Seattle sports?
What were Pete Carroll's first two games?
His first game, I believe, was against either the Rams or the 49ers. I want to say it was the 49ers, but I only vaguely remember.
Did they crush the 49ers in that game?
I think they pretty comfortably beat them. It was immediately after game one of the 2010 WNBA Finals. So I was watching it at Buckley's after covering that game at Key Arena.
What year is this? 2009?
2010.
2010. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, shockingly, Jim Mora in his first two games.
No one was looking to Jim Elmore in this particular statistic, or Jack Patera with all this. Yeah. Chuck Knox didn't
beat the Niners 31-6 and then lost at Denver pretty badly. That was the year. I mean, it was obviously they made the playoffs, but they just could not win on the road at all.
Well, they were 28th in DVOA, or maybe 31st. They might have been worse. They were aggressively a bad team when they made the playoffs and won a playoff game.
I didn't realize this was Halloween, but I remember being on Port Ludlow for a Sunday, and the Seahawks were playing on the road against the Raiders, and I remember just not even caring. I was just like, I'm not even going to bother paying attention. I know what the outcome's going to be. They lost that game 33-3.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, Mike McDonald. So we're recapping the weekend first.
So you were in Las Vegas for this game.
Yes.
How much of the Seahawks game were you able to watch?
I mean, I was watching on Red Zone, and which I felt like, I mean, first off, the mornings on Red Zone, great viewing experience. Red Zone, when there's so many games happening, if you're trying to focus in on any single game, it is much more frustrating. So and I felt like they were actually showing Seahawks Patriots way less than most of the games, because they sort of have a hierarchy of like what they're paying attention to on Red Zone. And I think they were pretty low on that hierarchy. They came on almost never. So I had a general sense of what the score was, but where the teams were on the field, that I didn't really know at any given time until the very, very end. Like I think they only showed the Patriots punting in overtime, which, but I think they only showed that. And then they showed the entire Seahawks drive and the game winning field goal. And then they also showed the field goal to tie the game, which again, I was kind of disoriented with what was going on, trying to pay attention to that. It's sunny, it's hot. I thought the 4th-and-1 that they had when they eventually took the delay of game and then kicked the field goal, I didn't realize in the moment, again, because I was also thinking about the spread and covering the spread, it didn't occur to me that they could kick a field goal. They were down 3, and I was like, this is the ball game. Right, I said this to Luca. I was like, this is the ball game right here, this play. And then they took a delay of game, and I'm like, what are you doing? And then they kicked a field goal, and I was like, oh, of course.
I mean, it still certainly was a choice.
Still apply whether I need them to win by 3.5 points, by 4 points or more.
Had Jason Myers missed that field goal, the decision to take the delay of game would be getting the same Chris scrutiny that another 4th-and-1 decision in Seattle sports from last weekend is currently getting. But Yeah, even though the numbers favored going for it there, I gotta say I was perfectly fine with kicking the field goal in that spot. I don't know how you felt about it once you understood what the
Oh,
score
I
actually
was
was.
actually so deeply relieved when they kicked it.
I mean, partially just because of the fact that after they had missed on fourth and one previously in a situation where they could have kicked a field goal, if they would have lost the game by 3 points after making both of those decisions, again, just the discourse would have been unbearable. And kudos to Mike McDonald, third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin posted about this, had a really interesting, perspective and walked Brock and Salk through kind of the entire fourth down decision making process during his coach's show on Monday morning
I gotta
after the
start
game.
listening to this. Again, just because it's Pete Carroll doesn't mean
Well,
I can't listen. It's one
the
of
thing
those things
is,
where you just like have it in your head at certain points.
90% of what Mike McDonald seems to say in interviews is like designed to be as bland and uninteresting as possible. But that was the
Honestly,
10%.
that's how you know you have a great coach is if they say nothing.
He like has not said one thing about injuries yet all season. I mean, obviously you had to like take Pete Carroll's injury updates through the translator, which is like it's a legitimate injury. It means he's going to be out for the season.
Amputated. Yep.
But once you did that, you actually could glean some stuff. Mike McDonald is not giving anything away. Yeah, I mean, the other element was, look, this isn't necessarily going to impact your odds of getting any one fourth and one that much. The Seahawks were not particularly effective running the ball in this game. I think that probably is more a reflection on the state of the offensive line, which is playing without George Fant and has gotten not great play from the interior, from the guards, I would say thus far,
And
although
probably
Charles
a
Cross
pretty
has been
good
terrific.
defense as well.
Yeah. So I didn't feel terrific about the chances of getting a yard in that situation. And then the Patriots' conservatism actually played to their favor in terms of both, New England being able to get anything going after getting the ball back in a tie game with plenty of time left on the clock, and then also punting in a fourth and one situation and just not even considering going for it in overtime.
Oh, I mean the Patriots lost this game for themselves. And again, I didn't really see that in the moment, but after looking at it again, it was legitimately shocking that they did that because, I mean, if they don't get it, the game is over. But basically, the second that they kick that, the best case scenario is not a tie, but it does sort of put you in the position that if the Seahawks have any kind of drive at all, they can milk a lot of clock. And you're only a couple of first downs away from losing the game. It was one of those moments where basically, there's ways that you play to try to maximize your odds to win the game. And there's ways that you play to maximize your chances of delaying winning the
Minimize
game
your
or delay.
chances of losing the game immediately.
And that's how the Patriots played it. They played scared. It was a scared perspective. And if I was some, I think John Mayo is probably a fine coach overall on the field. Seems like he's done pretty good things with the Patriots so far. But if Jerod Mayo was my head coach, that exact moment would be the reason that I would have been scared about having a coach like Jerod Mayo be the coach. And he showed it right there. He lost them the game. And who knows? Maybe they don't get it. But in that moment, when you see, I mean, Antonio Gibson at freaking 9 yards per carry, then Ramondre Stevenson at about four, like they're picking up that yard. And it was different than the Husky game that you're talking about because you don't have the end zone to contend with. That's the middle of the field. You've got everything available to you there. And I think the Seahawks should be very thankful for that decision. But the reality is, it doesn't really matter because the better team won the game
Correct.
on Sunday. And that is what matters the most. The only reason that we'd be like, ooh, wow, really, like they did dodge a bullet by being and to be 2-0. But if it was a situation where the Seahawks were the worst team and they just got lucky to win it, it would feel a little bit more bittersweet. In the end, the team that played better, and DVOA told us this, the team that played better on the field won the game. And that was the Seahawks against a pretty legit, I think, Patriots team. Like I don't think they're the worst team in the NFL. I mean, the Patriots exist, but like, or the Panthers exist. But
I
I
don't
don't
think they're the
think we're
worst
going to
team
get.
the Seahawks have played this season.
Exactly. We're not going to get to the end of the season and be like, wow, I can't believe they only beat the Patriots by three. Like they are a competent NFL team.
I mean, I think one thing we did learn last week, or at least reframed our perspective, the expectations for the Seahawks defense after 1 week may have been a bit too high. The Broncos' difficulty scoring against the Steelers, combined with the Patriots' success on the ground, did suggest that perhaps this is not the best defense in the NFL, I would say. That is possible. And that, You know, this is one of those things we've been monitoring. We've been just discussing it on the Discord, although I don't think it's really showed up on the podcast at all yet. Is what are the odds that the Seahawks offense is or defense is better than the Seahawks offense in DVOA this season? And after week one, I was feeling like the odds are about 90%. Now I'm back down probably closer to the 45 to 50% range. I don't know where you are on that.
What are the odds that the defense is better than the offense this season by
In
DVOA?
DVOA, yeah.
I think it's like 75%. I actually unpacking these numbers, when you look at it, like yes, like Antonio Gibson had a pretty good game. Rhamondre Stevenson had a fine game. Hunter Henry had a big game. But they were pretty dramatically swayed by a handful of big plays. And big plays happen and are part of the game. But the thing that I see the most, like give up fucking 4 yards per carry to Rhamondre Stevenson. That's fine. The
Especially, especially for my fantasy team. Very fine.
Hunter Henry stuff defending the tight end was a little surprising,
And that was
but
mostly in the first half. Then they moved Julian Love on him, and that really quieted down in the second half for the
see,
Patriots. Had a hard
I
time
didn't
moving the
see
ball down
it
the field.
enough to really know what happened, but I did feel like the Patriots were punting a lot. And
They were.
the other receivers, again, this might be a New England issue, but Jalen Polk, 2 for 12, Ramondre, 2 for 9,
I think
KJ
it's
Osborne,
fully.
1 for 7.
It's fully a New England issue. Everyone ex thought they had the worst set of wide receivers in the NFL, and so far that seems to be the case. I mean, that's where, look, the offense, and part of this is like, hey, the offense is still very good. They're sixth in offensive DVOA, fifth in defensive DVOA right now. It's still VOA. There's no opponent adjustments at this point. And certainly, I think you'd say that the Broncos and Patriots are much stronger on defense than they are on offense. And the Seahawks, without almost any running game whatsoever, with Ken Walker the third injured and with the injuries on the offensive line, still managed to score enough points and move the ball really consistently because Geno Smith was that good. One of, I think, his stronger performances, all things considered. Like, obviously, he's had better statistical days, but just some of the throws he was making, the situations he was in, very little play action, as Ben Baldwin posted about. Lowest play action rate in the league so far, which is kind of surprising given what we knew about Ryan Grubb at Washington and why that
I
hasn't
think that,
translated over yet.
and in the preseason also, but I think the argument that they just don't have that level of faith in the offensive line, that they don't want plays that are moving as slowly as it might take for play action. I think you can't criticize anything about Ryan Grubb at this point. Whatever he did was right, given
I don't know if I'd
the
go
outcome.
that far, but yes, it's worked out.
They should have scored more than 23 points. Like, this was a very effective offensive game for the Seahawks against what is probably a pretty good defense of the Patriots. I mean, this is still a team that went into Cincinnati, who a week later looked pretty good against
And they
Kansas
were top
City.
10 defense in 2023. Like, or prior is that the Patriots are pretty good defensively, just that they, you know, we thought they were going to be atrocious offensively, and it seems at least two teams are going to be worse than them
I
offensively based
think
on what we've seen.
what has kind of played out, and looking at those performances from DK and JSN, I love that with the offensive line being banged up with Ken Walker out, that they didn't run the ball that much. They said we need to pass the ball, and that's what they did. And I think right now you could legitimately make an argument that they are the best pair of receivers, and you could even include Tyler Lockett in there, and the best trio of receivers in the NFL. And if you kind of look at it, like the other ones, I mean, you know, Ja'Marr Chase has had a pretty slow start. T. Higgins isn't even playing. Like Nico Collins and
Stephon Diggs?
I guess Diggs, but it's not like Diggs has had a massive start to the season, is definitely entering new
Not much to my
territory.
dismay.
I mean, like pairs of this is a tight end or receiver, but like the highest one in just raw yardage right now is Davante Adams and Brock Bowers. But Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, like there are other ones, but
Well, that's why I think it's a stronger case with the three, because even though Tyler Lockett, the volume isn't there right now. You know, how many targets does Tyler Lockett have thus far this
and
season?
had a
Nine.
game-changing play as well.
That's what I'm saying is, even though his volume has gone to Jackson Smith
That's
and Jigba in a way that
also 8 receptions on 9 targets as well.
I'm making this point. Will you
Okay.
let me make the point? Like, he's highly efficient every time you go to him. And that also doesn't include the huge DPI that he drew on Sunday that was a key swing in the game after he had the game clinching catch on third down in week one against Denver. Like, Tyler Lockett is your third receiver is such a luxury to have. That's a great position to be in.
And I think that's why, you know, at least I was so positive about the offense heading into the season. And if the defense, if we're having the conversation that the defense team, I know that they've won both of these games close against two teams who probably weren't considered, who probably are considered top 10 like picks in the
Yeah,
draft for this year.
this was the argument that Ben made on Twitter in explaining why the Seahawks haven't actually moved down after last week in terms of the, you know, kind of implicit spread power rankings that he looks at from week to week. They're rated right at league average now. And his point was, well, they were expected, you know, they were 6.5 point favorites in week one. They won by six. They were 3.5 point favorites or 3 point favorites, I guess, by the time you bet on them. In week two, they won by three. But that's where I
No,
think
it
that.
was an even three. It was a three.
That's why I
We
said.
needed them to win by four. Yes. We
That's why I said
pushed.
at. That's why I think the Football Outsiders analysis that they are number two in DVOA because they have been much more dominant in those games than the raw point differentials would suggest is so interesting. And Football Outsiders, I guess they're not Football Outsiders anymore. DVOA,
They're still Football Outsiders. Come on.
NFTN Fantasy. No, you know, Football Outsiders, the brand we do not want to give any
Okay.
love to. But at FTN Fantasy, why
What
they
about
are
Aaron
so
Schatz?
effusive about the Seahawks, they are now eighth in Dave, which is the version, the predictive version that incorporates preseason expectations, have the highest projected win total in the NFC West ahead of the San Francisco 49ers right now. I mean, it's wild stuff, but you know, especially if you're looking at predicting the outcome of the final season as opposed to just how good they are. The other aspect of this is, yes, the Seahawks were favored in both of these games. Yes, even if they're not very good, they had a chance of going 2-0, but they also could have been a good team and still gone 1-1 and still gone 0-2. We've seen good Seahawks teams lose games like this in the past. And the fact that they didn't, now your expectations for the season are quite high. I mean, I don't know if I want to go as high as, you know, almost 11 wins on average, but I certainly think I would take the over on 9 wins at this point, which probably translates to a playoff spot.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, they won the games, and that's the primary thing that matters. And seeing the Dolphins coming up, who we'll talk about later, there's a very good chance that they end up 3-0 right now. I thought we were going to start this podcast by you talking about how I had preemptively taken a victory lap on both Mike McDonald and Jed Fish and chastising me for it, and I was
Oh,
so ready to defend against this.
whoa. It
But at
was
the very least,
I mean, it was definitely undeserved overconfidence weekend for a long period of
I'm
time
sorry,
there.
but it was scary. It was scary.
When the Patriots were marching the ball down the field on the ground
Oh
to
no. Yeah,
take the lead over the Seahawks. Yeah, there was a lot of references to it in the Discord, that's for sure.
I was a little scared. I'm not gonna lie. But so far, the Mike McDonald, Ryan Grubb, the Seahawks new regime seems like they have done basically everything right now, given what they've
Again, I
presented.
just like,
And
why do you need to say that? They
why
seem like
not?
what we hoped they would be. Just say that.
I don't know if that's true though.
What do you mean by that?
They don't seem like what we they're fucking second in DVOA right now.
But I'm
If
saying the
that's what you
coaches
hope they
are
were,
what we hoped they would be, not the team is what we hoped they would be.
but the coaches and the team are not like they're inseparable from each other. The coaches are coaching the players on the field. And
No, but again, the number two in DVOA before there's any opponent adjustments, because yes, I think the
but they're
Patriots are
number
better than we
nine in
thought,
Dave. How about
but
that?
they're still not a good team.
The Seahawks still aren't a good team? Or
No,
the
the
opponents aren't a
Patriots
good team?
are not a good team. The Seahawks, I do believe, are a good team.
I don't know. I'm very happy with it, and I'm pushing back against your premature victory laps or whatever.
They're not my premature victory laps.
I'm pushing back against you saying that I was taking premature victory laps and I was taking appropriately timed victory laps. But the other thing that we talked about was going to this game, it felt like it was good. It was a different game than I think we thought it was going to be, which again, it's week two. The thing about the NFL is you do not know what's going to happen. We obviously would not have predicted that the Falcons after week one would have beaten the Eagles, that the Vikings after week one would have beaten the Niners. Those are things we would not have predicted, that the Rams season is now, they looked very good against Detroit overall, but now the Rams look in kind of disarray. Those are things that heading into week two, we probably would not have predicted. And the thing that we thought about that game, or at least I thought about that game, was that I thought Geno would be good, but maybe struggle a little bit. And Geno is that dude going into New England against a good defense and having that kind of game, getting the ball to DK, getting the ball to JSN, the pass to Tyler Lockett that drew the penalty. Geno had himself an incredible game. And right now, he's pretty clearly to me a top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
Which is why you should definitely be talking about extending him right now. Like, look, maybe Geno Smith believes he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL as well. But what you have now is the ability to offer him a high degree of security and, a greater comfort than the possibility of, playing out next season on the last year of his current deal and then potentially being franchised the year after that and taking a lot of risk that by the time he actually gets a long-term deal, through unrestricted free agency, A, he's much older, and B, he's had these two, three seasons to potentially get injured. Like, you should be trying to take advantage of that in a renegotiation and not sticking to some bullshit rule that we only renegotiate guys in the last year of their deal because everyone knows that quarterbacks are different. And I don't care if it makes it slightly harder, your eventual extension negotiations with Jaxon Smith-Njigba. That's just not worth it to not have the conversation right now with Geno Smith. It's basically the equivalent of like, well, from a risk management standpoint, their unwillingness to do this, I think, is like, well, I can't put my money in the stock market because the stock market might go down. Like, no, that's not how it works. To get the benefit of the higher return, you have to take a certain degree of risk. And the Seahawks' unwillingness to take any hurts them regularly in this regard.
Extend Geno, people. The other thought that I had after this weekend in NFL was, we talk about this in college all the time, and this is not, it's not true. Like, you can always cherry pick individual cases, but I think that there's been an argument about Geno that, I mean, about his age or whatever, right? He was a starting quarterback for a long period of time. I was thinking about, I think being an experienced NFL quarterback is actually one of the most underrated pieces of NFL quarterback success, at least right now in the NFL. Maybe that'll change, but through 2 weeks of the 2024 season, I was thinking about Geno. And again, when it's Michael Penix Jr. playing against players who are 3, 4 years younger than him, we're like, of course Michael Penix Jr. is way better. He's had that many more reps. And the speed is different, maybe, but why isn't that true for the NFL? And I think what we're seeing between Derek Carr, like, look at these quarterbacks in Ben Baldwin's adjusted EPA and PFF grade leaderboard 2024. I think a combination of experience and pedigree is one of the most underrated factors in judging a quarterback. But a lot of these quarterbacks, basically all of them, are into, say, their 5th year in the NFL. Kyler Murray, Derek Carr, Geno Smith, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Brock Purdy is one of the younger ones, Aaron Rodgers, CJ Stroud, Baker Mayfield, Trevor Lawrence. And I do feel like having that experience as an NFL quarterback sitting there watching over and over and over again, taking all of those reps, is an underrated factor. And we get very, very excited about young quarterbacks, but having that experience as a quarterback, the age, I think it matters when you're trying to diagnose extraordinarily complicated NFL defenses for those players. And I think that's where Geno Smith is at right now. He had the pedigree of being a first round pick, and he has the decade
Not a
of
first round
experience
pick.
as a quarterback. Or sorry, one a projected first round pick and a second round pick after that, right?
Yes.
But Geno Smith has the pedigree. It's not like I don't think you could take a 7th round quarterback or something like that, give them a decade, and all of a sudden they'd be a very good quarterback. But a similar situation to Derek Carr, where both of them were drafted around the same place,
I mean, Derek
have
Carr started as a rookie. I guess Derek Carr has
But
started
no, that,
continually since he was a rookie.
but what I'm saying is Derek Carr has, I don't know if he's gotten better throughout his career necessarily, but like, experience matters in the NFL. And I think it's actually one of the most underrated factors of NFL quarterbacks.
So I
Obviously, there are
was actually
players.
thinking about this, and I have a different take on it entirely.
Wow, you have
And
the
it's,
opposite take.
I think someone said, this might have been on the broadcast on Sunday, that someone mused, like, man, can you imagine if Geno had like the Seahawks infrastructure from day one, like, what he would have been able to do. And I'm like, no, the only reason that Geno has been able to succeed is because of the fact that he had to go through the wilderness for a period of time and, be humbled by being a backup quarterback and learn, kind of the work ethic part of it. And that element that I think changed as a backup quarterback when he was preparing like a starter. And I think that's the re like the fact that he was unsuccessful in his first two stops is why he's successful now. Not, it's not he was successful now despite being unsuccessful there.
You're making the exact same argument that I'm making,
No,
though.
I'm not,
And
because I'm not saying it's strictly about experience, because again, you
but
can have a lot
that's
of
why the
experience without like having to recalibrate your own game plan.
I think the pedigree matters too in that as well, though, because you have to be good enough to stay in the NFL.
Of
And there are
course.
some quarterbacks who just haven't done it, or have, like you were saying, the work ethic, the grit, whatever it is, to maintain on an NFL roster. And it's not an easy thing to do, but Geno Smith was able to put in the time, the work to get better throughout those years, to remain consistent throughout those years. And now he's at that place. But all of that stuff is learning. Like, I don't think we're making opposite arguments. How about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree. I think we're making opposite arguments, but I
Because
think it is there is a different nuance to it.
there are certain quarterbacks that NFL teams are just like, we're good. Like, we're not interested. And Geno Smith was not one of those quarterbacks. He sat and he learned for a long period of time. Derek Carr has been a consistent NFL quarterback for a very long time. And having that, he's playing against players who haven't seen as many things necessarily as he has, similar to a Michael Penix or somebody like that, who those reps matter.
But I don't know if I quite buy this argument because like we know what the aging curve is for quarterbacks. It's not like the curve is constantly going up and up as you gain more experience. Like athleticism and arm strength and things like this go down, and that does matter as you get older. But I sometimes you are in the place where your experience is in the right system for your talents, and that system in New Orleans is like constant fucking play action under Clint Kubiak from the Shanahan tree, and that is what's happening.
I think if you looked at, again, this is a very small sample size, but the quarterbacks, like, as they rank in this metric that I was talking about, like, the top half is in general more experienced than the bottom half.
I do think
It might be a
experience is
temporary thing.
probably underrated. I agree with that. So it'll be
It
interesting to
might be
see.
a temporary thing, but it's a thing we've talked about a lot in college these last couple of years, and it obviously matters in college.
But we have
Now,
seen, like, look, I study this for a living in the NBA. It's not like the fact that experience is so important in college basketball, where, Fran Fraccilla, my colleague at ESPN, his line is get old and stay old is the way to win in college basketball. That doesn't translate over in the NBA. Actually, I think teams have gotten much too old in the last few years, and it's really hurting the Phoenixes and Golden States of the world. I mean, maybe not Golden State. They do have a lot of young talent, but Phoenixes and Milwaukees of the world, let's say.
I see. I'm not sure if it matters. I think for the quarterback position, I think athleticism matters less than, say,
But
the
again,
NBA.
there is an aging curve, and I don't know if I
I'm not
would
saying
say
there
it
isn't
matters
an
less
aging
because I
curve.
mean Barnwell just wrote a whole piece last week about the way that quarterback rushing has transformed the NFL.
You need to have a fast quarterback like Geno Smith, too.
Yeah, I mean the beauty is if you get a quarterback who at age 33 is still the fastest player on your not is still became the fastest player on your team all of a sudden on a team that has Reek Woolen. I don't know how this happened, but it did, and I love it.
Maybe Geno Smith is just a unicorn,
Extend Geno.
but I do think
I've
reading
worked
and
back to that
identifying
conclusion.
defenses is a different thing than an NBA team. Like, NBA teams have to do a lot less of that. And football is about making one decision, identifying something and making one decision. Whereas the NBA is more of a flow overall, right? You could agree with that, can't you?
Yes,
And
but
the same way with
spend enough
college
time
as
on
well.
this.
I don't know. Obviously, I wish I had seen more of this game. And it was very nice that they won the game. It made my time much better. And that they pushed also. But I'm feeling very positive about the Seahawks right now.
Do you know a game you didn't don't wish you had seen more of? Even though we didn't see the full 60 minutes.
Close enough.
It's the
Too
Apple Cup.
close.
I was pretty furious about the fact that we were not in the stadium at the start of this game and the lines were so long to get in beforehand. But obviously all the attention has been focused on the very end of this game and the final offensive play for the Huskies. And that is where I have some thoughts I need to get off my chest here, because
Okay.
the Seattle media is furious that after originally saying it was a bad play call, Jed Fish walked that back at his Monday press conference and talked about how it would have worked if the execution would have been better. And he's not taking accountability, which, as you know, is my single least favorite word in all of sports. The single most meaningless and overused word in all of sports. Jed Fish is not taking accountability for his decisions. And the funny thing is, I actually think there was something Jed Fish said on Monday that is very concerning to me from a process standpoint about Jed Fish, as we have seen the honeymoon period is fully over for Jed Fish. Yeah, I don't know if there ever was a honeymoon period, but it is fully over. Anyways, there's a play in the Seahawks game that I think relates to the decision. Like, look, from a process standpoint, do I love running option to the short side of the field at the goal line with a quarterback who is not known for his running ability? No. But I remember last year on Thursday Night Football, the Seahawks lost a close game in Dallas. There was a fourth down play where the Seahawks attempted to pass. Geno Smith immediately gets pressured by Micah Parsons. The play gets blown up. He basically throws the ball under the ground. There's no chance of success. And people were furious about that play call. How could you make such a ridiculous play call as Shane Waldron in a fourth and one situation? And hilariously, and Matty Brown was the first person I saw highlight this on Twitter. Maybe someone else got to it first. The Seahawks used the exact same play concept on third and six in overtime against the Patriots. A play that effectively sealed the game to leak Zach Charbonnet, not Zeke Charbonnet, Zach Charbonnet out of the backfield for a 7-yard completion and a critical first down, and then kicked almost immediately after that, which was kind of
They
interesting.
kicked way too soon.
And it's that was maybe worth asking Mike McDonald about
If you,
kicking on
especially if you
second
wanted them
down.
to win by 4 points or more, they kicked way too soon.
Why? Some of us were not as concerned about that element. So this is play call that, like last year, if you would have asked Seahawks fans, "Hey, what's the chance of probability? What's the chance of success for this play call?" And they would have said, "Oh, it's a ridiculous play call. Like, you're going to leave Micah Parsons unblocked? 15%, 10%." They would have said some number like that. That play then worked in a different, exactly the way that the Seahawks had
I mean, Micah
designed it.
Parsons wasn't there, but yes.
Well, Keon White is pretty, not edge rushing necessarily, but he is a fearsome defender. Keon White, not a fluke week one. And so there's this thing. So first off, hindsight bias is just so pernicious, because we can't even think about how we would have thought about the play without knowing the results, because we know the results. Does that make sense? Because we know it didn't work, therefore there was no chance of it working. But like, the average probability of converting in fourth and one in that situation is probably like 60%, I would say.
On
Like,
which situation? The Huskies one or the Seahawks?
I mean, either, but the Huskies one, let's say.
I feel like it's less because you don't, again, not having the full field to
You
work
don't have
with is
to account for it. I
it's
didn't
a
go and
little
look up.
different.
Anyways, the whatever the number is exactly doesn't matter. The idea is, if you went to Ryan Grubb or Jed Fish or Shane Waldron or any coach, Kalen DeBoer, and said, "What's your single best play call in this situation? Like, the one that you have been saving all season for this point." The odds of that succeeding are maybe 75%. And then if you asked, like, within the realistic world of play calls you might attempt here, because no one is trying not to get it, no one is calling a kneel here, maybe that's 50%. Maybe it's a 50-50. Like, it's a 25% swing, but people talk about it as if it's a 100% swing. And it is a ridiculous way to approach things. It is not the way that sports works. It is not the way that life works. And you think back to the fourth and one last year in the Apple Cup, where Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer decided to go for it on their own side of the field and dialed up the end around to Rome Odunze that ended up setting up the game-winning field goal. Like, if that hadn't worked, obviously the reaction wouldn't be the same, because the Huskies were undefeated and had lost only two games at that point in Kalen DeBoer's tenure as head coach, which is part of, I think, why people are overreacting to this particular loss. Like, how many people would have said, "Oh my God, how did they get so cute? Why are you taking the ball out of Michael Penix Jr.'s hands? Why aren't you just running up the middle?" Like, that discourse would have been endless. But because the play worked, we never hear a bit of it.
Yeah, I agree. I was expecting to argue with you about this game. I didn't realize I'd agree with you. I mean, I'm not gonna say that
I do have a quibble with something Jed Fish said on Monday.
I don't know if I necessarily agree that it was a great play call. Like, I think the play call was wrong still, but And it was,
I mean, even if it
baffling.
is 75% versus 50%, yes, obviously you should call the 75% one. But again, Jed Fish called it for a reason. He called it because he thought it was the 75%.
So on Saturday, I didn't know any of this stuff. On Saturday, he said it was the wrong play call. And then on Monday, he said they just didn't execute it.
Correct.
I mean, I...
Now it's the top of the Seattle Times.
Is it? I don't know. I mean, that's... It's the wrong way to describe things. I guess I just don't care, though. Like...
Whether he takes accountability for it?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about this all the time with Jerry DePoto and the 54% or whatever. It's like, go win some fucking baseball games, dog. I don't care what you say. The team isn't winning, and that's the factor.
I mean, I care a tiny bit because I do think, like, taking the blame for yourself is a better...
not going to call the right plays because he didn't take accountability.
Well, I do think there are two elements here. Number one is, if you're not evaluating the process of your decision, like, any play can work if you execute it correctly, but some plays are more likely to get executed than not.
I am so confident that the next time that situation happens, Jed Fish is going to dial up a different play call.
I'm sure he's going to dial up a different one. Number two, like, I do think it is good to send the message as a coach that it's my responsibility. Take that blame off of your players. I think that's an important thing that he was not doing on Monday. But those are minor points. The bigger concern to me, along the lines of my process and like the probability standpoint, is so before that fourth down play, the Huskies called a timeout. Previously, they had all three of their timeouts remaining, which meant even if they had failed at the goal line, and that was one of the downsides of running an option, is they lost yardage. Ideally, you would, even if you had turned the ball over, be sticking Washington State at their own one, such that they could not kneel, would have had to do the push sneak that they ended up attempting on second down, is that things turned out. And then you have a pretty good chance to get the ball back with, I think it would have been about 40 seconds left and no timeouts around midfield. Like, you've still got a chance to come down and have a reasonable offensive series and a chance to win the game.
So what did he say? You're mad with the timeout? Because he didn't call that timeout. Will Rogers called it.
Nope, he called it. Say that after the game.
That he called it?
Yes.
I saw Will Rogers turn to the ref and call it. Maybe he
I don't
heard
know,
in his
but,
headset.
But Jed Fish said he called it. I mean, I could go double check the quote, but I'm and his explanation was that based on the look that Washington State had given them defensively, that it was going, the play they had called, which was Giles Jackson was the first option, was going to be an incomplete pass. He said that there was a 0% probability of success on that play. And that is a very troubling way to think about it to me.
But I don't know if I necessarily
agree. I mean, maybe he's
agree.
Just exaggerating, like, for effect here.
It wasn't going to be, I mean, like, he's saying that from his diagnosis of the play, they had the wrong play called and they didn't have time to change it.
Correct. They didn't have anything
I'm
to
sure
check to.
He's not saying it's a 0% chance. I'm a little surprised that they didn't, like, these teams not just have a tush push. Like, come on.
We have not seen the Huskies sneak yet in the Jed Fish Will Rogers era.
I thought there was a chance of that. Jonah Coleman hadn't run the ball short particularly well in this game. So the thing that I was expecting to happen was you get motion at the line, you get a play action, and then you have a wide open player. It does happen pretty often. And you just,
it doesn't happen
100%. I'm not saying it happens 100%, but like when the Lions kept going for it, right? And they had the eligible receiver. Those types of plays to me seem more effective at the goal line. But again, like you said, had this been successful, they would have been fine. Like, ultimately, the line did just get blown up and Jonah Coleman didn't have a chance. But it's not like they didn't have two options. Will Rogers can keep the ball there. Literally, it's an option play. And neither option was open. Like, I think it was the wrong play call. But to me, I'm taking a step back further. And that is, people freaking out about this game are just like, oh, they got outcoached. And I'm sorry, but they did not get outcoached. Wazoo was lucky to win this game. That's just what happened. The University of Washington is a better football team than Washington State University. They are
significantly better. Well, I don't know if I do agree with that, because FPI efficiency has Washington State better on the course of the season. Washington might be a good team.
They might be a good team also, but that is still a compliment to UW. If UW lost this game to a good team, that's fine, because they were the better team on the field. I thought the game plan, for the most part, there were a couple times that they lost the quarterback, which were very frustrating. But he's just a good running quarterback. Shit is going to happen. And he was actually a more effective quarterback. Like, Natira was more effective than I thought he was going to be as a passer. But also, he made some awful throws. Have you seen the replay of the Prysock pick, by the way? Is that the
I
right
don't.
comment?
It was like 50-50. It probably shouldn't have been overturned given it was called a catch on the field.
The Huskies just got unlucky in this game and are the better team. You give me that game 1,000 times, they probably win it 600 or
I
something
mean,
like
which
that.
is the pregame win probability that we expected. I mean,
They are
I
a
will say
better team and they
the
played better.
success rates were even, which was not what I was expecting
But like
based
what
on
it
watching
took
it.
for the amount of unlikely things to happen that it took for Wazoo to win that game was significant, and very few unlikely things happened for you dubbing it.
I mean, the Huskies also got a fourth down stop at the goal line. I don't think you're slightly viewing this through purple colored glasses.
But I'm saying it's a quantity thing. Like the fourth down stop that happened for Wazoo was, didn't the UW also get stuffed on fourth down twice at the end of the game and then previously?
They did, yes, on a previous drive, come up with
So
nothing on a
then what the
fourth
fuck are
down.
you talking about?
Well,
Like
I'm
there
saying
were
two to one is not like two is not the same as 2-0. I'm again, you said no unlucky things happened for
I
Wazoo.
didn't say no unlucky things happened.
I think that's almost exactly what you said. I don't
I
have the
said
transcript.
there were a significant amount. The amount of interceptions that Metier could have thrown was definitely higher. It should have been higher by at least one. I think the Huskies, it was unlucky that Ephesians didn't catch that ball or whatever. It was unlucky that it was overturned also. Like it probably, I saw the replay of it and it looked like a catch to me. I haven't seen it, you know, same as like a broadcast replay. Maybe the ball moved, but for that to be overturned, that is a very unlucky thing to happen. For Wazoo, I mean, basically they lost the game ultimately because of what was it, 3rd and 18 that they picked up, maybe longer. Like that shit doesn't happen that often. Like, good for you, John Mateer. Wazoo might be in the playoffs. I am not ruling it out. I think there's actually a like a fair there's a higher chance of Wazoo being in the playoffs than there are of the Mariners being in the playoffs. So not a
I don't think
statistically,
FPI agrees with that, for the record.
I mean, you could, they'll probably lose some games, but like it's a fine team. Those things, even if he is a good running quarterback, do not happen that often. You'd up getting him in that situation of 3rd and 18. I thought the
Third and
game plan,
20.
3rd and 20, the game plan ultimately was a good plan.
Oh,
There were
wow.
so
No,
many plays.
I'm wildly wrong. The
About
odds
which thing?
about how high the Cougars' chances are making the college football playoff are,
What
according
are
to
they?
FPI, 1 in 4, 25%.
There you go, way higher than the Mariners. So
I mean, that's 5 times the Mariners.
I'm just saying, like, Wazoo might make the playoffs. And again, they had some things that went
Just a
well.
playoff. It's not the playoffs. Just a playoff.
Okay, fine. Whatever. I thought Will Rogers ultimately played a pretty good game in this.
Oh,
And I
played an
thought,
excellent game.
actually, for the most part, Jed Fish called a fairly good game. But there's a reality that we're way overreacting to this game. And it was not a good situation being at Lumen Field. The game should never be played there. I would have rather have been in Wazoo for this game. And Mateer is an extraordinarily hard quarterback to play against. Like that, he's going to be, that's why they have a 25% chance of making the playoffs. Because playoff.
Yes, it's still singular.
Sorry.
College football playoff.
Fine. But UW is a better team. They're a better team. They're a better coach team. This idea where they're like the Huskies got out coached on Saturday, I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? Like they
Well,
lost the
mostly
game.
that means that
They
they committed a lot of
committed
penalties.
penalties. The coaches weren't telling them to grab the face mask of Wazoo. But also, those are not penalties that need to be called. Like again, there were
Yes, they are penalties that need to be
to
called.
get to they're definitely not. There were some face masks that were 50-50 face masks. To get
You are
to
going by the screen that's like horizontal at Lumen Field, where they zoom in the most possible on every replay, and it is not, you have no context for what's going on. I would not pay any attention to anything you saw at the game. It is
Get to
not meaningful.
16 penalties for 135 yards requires bad luck. You
I
can't
mean,
deny
of
that.
course,
It's
but
not out coach. They weren't coached to do those things. They were unlucky. And sometimes you get unlucky in football games
you're
and then
saying
move
that
the fuck on.
people attribute too much of what happens in football to coaches or any sport? Again, exclusive. Must credit PeltonCast. We have discovered this. People overreact. I mean, the thing is,
I'm mad about it though, because
Husky
people are
fans
acting
don't know
like,
how to lose because we've only
how do they
lost.
not know how to lose? We've done this shit for years.
First off, not everyone has been around that whole period of
I
time.
didn't. There aren't Husky fans, first off.
And second,
they don't even fucking exist.
I mean,
It's a pathetic
there were a lot more
fandom.
Husky fans there than Cougar fans. I will say
Right?
that.
Couldn't even fill up half of a fucking stadium. I'm so sick of this goddamn team. I'm so sick of this goddamn fan base. How about that?
I am
If
too. I don't disagree.
everything about it was horrible, I'm mad at the fan base for not knowing how to win and also for not being bigger. I'm mad at them for everything. And also, I'm mad that it rained in Seattle. It just sucked. The whole fucking thing sucked. I hate It's so funny that I like going to Lumen Field for Seahawks games. Going there for that game was a miserable experience. Husky game ops were bad. Everything about it
It was
was
not the
not
Husky game ops. It was Seahawks game.
Seahawks game ops didn't know how to run a Husky Wazoo game.
Correct.
They're good at running Seahawks games, but they did not know how to run that game. And that's why it just shouldn't have existed.
Well,
Play two fucking games in a row at home. Why are we so concerned with being fair? Like, what the fuck does that even mean? Play another game in Seattle.
I think we're concerned with being fair because otherwise Washington State would not have agreed to the series.
Well, guess what? Maybe we should have taken a year off. There's no fair. We left your fucking conference. You know what I mean? Is that fair? Like, I don't, we have to be fair with this game, but like,
You
was it
keep
fair
using
to
this
Wazoo?
word fair. I don't think it means what you think it means. It's a negotiation between two parties. One side is only going to agree under certain circumstances.
We agreed to it
Why don't the
out
Seahawks
of
just
guilt.
trade
It
a
was a
seventh
guilt
round pick
agreement.
for Stephon Diggs? Why didn't they just do that? I don't
UW
know
agreed to
Stephon
it out of
Diggs.
guilt. But the reality is they got 9.3 yards per pass, which is excellent. That's what we want. If UW passes for 9.3 yards per pass all season, they're going to win a lot of games. And I think
I
people
agree
are
with this assessment.
underestimating. They are people are underestimating just how good UW played in this game and how repeatable the skills that they did are in this game. This changed nothing
I
about
think
my
you
opinion of the
have a
season.
tendency to overstate what is repeatable based on whatever favors your particular position at a given time.
I mean, do you not think 23 of 31 for 314 yards is repeatable?
I think that Washington State was selling out a considerable degree against the run. And I do think
But it's
at
one
some
or the
point teams
other.
will adjust.
Yeah, but then we run the ball. They didn't run the
I
ball
mean,
as well
also
as they had in previous
even though the
weeks.
Cougars are good and have a very good chance of making the playoff, they are not the best team the Huskies are going to face all season. Fun fact. Far from it.
Yeah, but this is probably the unluckiest they will be all season. People are also forgetting.
I mean,
UW
a
went
60% losing a 60% probability game is not that unlucky. Unlucky is losing
No,
a
it's
game
not.
that you're like a 90% win probability for.
It's not that unlucky, but what happened on the field was unlucky for the Huskies. You can't tell me it wasn't.
I mean, some of it was slightly
It
unlucky.
required a fourth and one stop, and people, I hate that shit, that people treat narratives based upon
Well,
one
first off, the
play.
game wasn't over if they got the fourth and one stop. You know, the Cougars would possess the football. They
That
would
game
be
was,
allowed to
come
continue to
on,
run plays
get
and
the fuck
potentially
out of
score
here.
points. Like
You know it
you
was
just
over.
are
They
defying
had
everything
Mateer
based on
figured out.
your position.
They had Mateer figured out.
Okay, cool. Cool.
But
Good for
also the
them.
fact
You know why you
that
get to say that?
Wazoo.
Because you never have to deal with the reality of it.
What
Just
is
like
the
you could have said
reality?
before the third down, if we never saw the third down, well, there's zero chance the Cougars will pick up third and 20, and then they fucking did.
Yes. Also, there would have been a minute seven on the clock. What are you talking about? The game isn't over. And they would
That's
have
a
needed
lot
to.
of time. In college football, a minute seven is an extraordinarily long amount of time.
I guess so. But like, okay, here are the previous plays before then. Punt, interception,
Yeah, they were
punt.
playing it differently because they had the lead. When you have no time, when you are down and have to go to a four down offense, you play differently. Do you not understand this? Why didn't the Eagles just stop the Falcons like they did all the rest of the game? Because it was a different situation. Ugh.
Okay.
This is an
I mean,
asinine take.
having to be at all of these possessions, just not punching in touchdowns of they had the one touchdown and then field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal for the Huskies
I'm
of their
worried.
scoring plays. Like, I honestly, like, the difference between scoring a touchdown and scoring a field goal is not necessarily like repeatable skills. Getting into the position to be
But
able to
again, I'm
do
telling
that.
you, the success rate in this game was the same. The same for the Cougars and the Huskies.
What
You
was
don't
it?
seem to be listening to this. Yes, the Huskies had more yards per play, but if you factor in penalties and special teams where the Cougars had an advantage, then it was not. And one of the re non-repeatable things that happened in this game was turnover did favor the Huskies. So again, you're just only including in repeatable skills anything that favors UW, and everything that favored Wazoo is unrepeatable.
I'm admitting that I think Wazoo is a pretty good team. I think Wazoo is a better team than I thought they were. I just think going forward, like UW lost to a UCLA team in Kalen DeBoer's first season, and this kind of reminded me of that loss.
I think that's not unreasonable.
And I we probably freaked out about it at the time, but the difference
No, we definitely
was.
didn't freak out about it at the time. The Mariners clinched a playoff spot for the first time in 21 years the same
Yes.
night.
Yes.
You were upset. The
I was
rest of us were all pretty
furious. Do you
excited.
remember that? I the Cal rally hit the home run, and I swear I went to the chat and said, I feel nothing right now. I stand by it.
Hold on, let me see if I can search that
That is so funny.
in chat. And I felt nothing because I was busy watching the first NBA game at Climate Pledge Arena.
And I think I made the argument after that game that UW outplayed UCLA. And there were things that that UW team did.
Well, now you feel totally different about that game because you know Jake Bobo in a different way.
Oh, now I'm cheering for UCLA.
I mean, we still had Roman Dunze.
I probably, after that game,
This is
argued
the
that
next
UW
day.
outplayed
Hold on.
UCLA.
Hold on. This is the
Okay, let's
next
hear it.
day. I'm the only person in Seattle who woke up upset about sports. Aramis
Yes.
texted me and was like, "I know you're happy." And in my head, I thought, "I have never been more depressed." Oh, and also, you said they didn't just lose, it was a wake-up call.
That's awesome. I'm
Thank
so happy we have that.
God for the chat.
Wow, UCLA killed them. I mean, that was a very good UCLA team. Obviously, it was DTR, Bobo, Charbonnet, but like that game, how about this as a take? That game that UW lost at UCLA was a worse loss than the game that UW just lost to Wazoo this weekend.
Worst loss in what sense?
In
Like the
that they
Huskies
gave up.
performed worse in that game than they did?
Yes. Michael
I don't
Penix
know,
was
probably.
not
Also,
great in that game.
the worst loss of that season was the next week at an Arizona State team that was not very good. You'll recall.
I do recall.
And
Wow.
lost its starting quarterback midway through the game.
Look at these Seahawks in this game. Charbonnet 22 for 124, three receptions for 56. And then Jake Bobo 6 for 142. Like that to me, again, talking about repeatable skills and who this team is overall. Total yards in that game, UCLA had 500 yards.
I
UW
agree
had
that
410.
UCLA team was better than Washington State this year.
See, I don't, that's not exactly what I'm saying, because this Wazoo team, that UCLA team really didn't have much of a defense. And John Mateer is, people are going to game plan against him, but he is a beast to deal with. And again, that's why Wazoo has 25% chance of making the College Football Playoff. So I'm saying overall, in the grand scheme of things, we probably didn't overreact to it because the previous season, Jimmy Lake was the head coach. Like, it was
Again, we
such a
just
train
noted
wreck.
you overreacted to it.
I didn't
But
overreact to it. I was devastated
you
because
said it was a wake-up call. That is over by definition an overreaction.
I don't know what it was a wake-up call about.
And I said worst case scenario, like we're a million times more fun than last season. This perspective that you're espousing is what I espoused at the time.
Oh man, the safety too. That safety was so frustrating. It should have been a safety. Oh, that he came back and threw a pick like right after. Oh my God, I'm still upset about it. That team makes the playoff. They make the playoff, or they make a College Football Playoff game if they win that one.
Probably.
Or Arizona State. So anyway, some perspective that 2 years ago we were in a very similar situation with a very similar team
I
and
mean, it's not a
lost
very
again.
similar team. This team is not going to finish top 10 in the country. It's just not.
Why? Why?
They're not that good.
But was Okay, after this game, I mean, the Huskies were, this was further into the
I mean,
season.
is there a path to finishing in the top 10? Yes, but that's not a realistic expectation for this team. It never has been a realistic expectation in this team. That's the other reason people should not be upset about losing this, because this is just a transition season and it's all
Why
fine.
am I the only one who sees that it's not, though?
I don't know why you're I don't know why you can't see things. I because you're purple colored glasses. We already talked about them.
But it's not about having purple colored glasses. It's about the 9.2 yards per reception in the game,
Okay, that's
or per
great.
pass.
They've played other games. That was not the first game in the history of Will Rogers' career.
This defense is better than that defense was, too.
Fine. They're
We
a
believe it
500
until they
Big
win.
Ten team. Like, and that's fine. It's totally fine. They don't need to go to the college football playoff every year. That's not a reasonable expectation for University of Washington athletics. The other thing I
I
want to complain about.
refuse to change my perspective on this team yet. Okay, let's hear what else you want to complain about.
Take the idea that people being upset about taking Will Rogers off the field for Damon Williams Jr. And I'm curious, do those people remember that the Huskies had the Heisman runner-up the last two seasons? And they often, I guess they technically maybe didn't take him off the field when they ran Wildcat because he would line up as a wide receiver, but he was pretty much off the field so that you could run short yardage plays, because often it's more effective to have multiple possible ball carriers in those situations. And I think if people thought of Damon Williams Jr. as basically the Huskies' wildcat quarterback in these situations, as opposed to a backup who's coming off the field to replace Will Rogers, they would think about that differently.
I love Damon Williams. I think they're both good.
You think everyone on the team is going to win the Heisman all at the same time? All right, let's get to the toss.
I'm just telling you, if they gain a yard, the conversation is radically different. That's it.
I don't think it's the conversation is what's the Huskies' path to the playoff, because they happen to beat
That's not necessarily what I'm
Washington State by
saying.
3 points. That is what you're saying.
I'm looking at it and I'm like, they might be a 500 Big Ten team. But
Yeah. We should
I don't
note
know.
first that it is one of the best times of the year, because fresh hop season is back. I had my
Yeah.
first fresh hop of the year last Friday night at Beer Star, although they weirdly only had hazy fresh hop IPAs instead of West Coast fresh hop IPAs. Like, the hops are grown on the West Coast. You got to use them to make West Coast IPAs. What are we doing, people?
God damn it.
I did look this up for you. Did you know that there's a non-alcoholic fresh hop out there?
Really?
Apparently, Crux Brewing in Portland does one. I'm sorry, it is from Oregon.
Sounds bad to me, if we're being honest.
All right.
The state from down south.
The best thing that happened in UW sports over the past weekend, or in
Sports.
UW adjacent the past weekend. Congrats to Seattle native and UW alum Jean Smart, who won her sixth Emmy
Hello.
Award Sunday as lead actress in a comedy series, her third time being so honored for her role in Hacks. I thought you were going to have something to say about this since you told me to put it in the notes.
I just wanted to make sure it was in the notes. Jean Smart has really just been around for a long time.
It is
But
true.
do you remember being a kid watching Designing Women?
I do. I don't remember Jean Smart specifically. Mean,
And
Delta
then I
Burke had a pretty
also
high usage rate back then.
pretty high usage rate on Designing Women. That's the first time that sentence has ever been uttered. Delta Burke had a pretty high usage rate.
Every unique sentence.
And like the New York Times, first time appeared in New York Times.
Every sentence is unique. Yeah, I'm going with that one. Okay.
But I did not know before this that Dog's House.
Yeah, I don't feel like that got as much attention until recently. But she was in Seattle, I think, over the summer,
When
and
game
it
day is here, get Jean Smart up there.
let's
We're
go.
done with you, Joel McHale.
I mean, Joel McHale could be part of it too.
Jean Smart calling the picks.
All right. Well, speaking of ESPN broadcast, welcome back to Linda Cohn, who will be anchoring 15 games as part of the Kraken's new broadcast crew on King and Kong. The longtime SportsCenter host worked at Cairo as a weekend sports anchor and sports reporter prior to joining ESPN. KJR host Ian Furness will also be part of the broadcast team as a host.
Wow, okay.
Congrats to Julia Hunt of UW Volleyball, who was chosen Big Ten Freshman of the Week. Hunt, a middle blocker from Kentucky, had double-digit kills in back-to-back games last weekend as UW beat Washington State and Texas A&M as part of an 8-0 non-conference start. The Huskies wrap up non-conference play this week against Long Beach State and Pepperdine.
Many are saying the only UW-Wazoo matchup that mattered over the weekend.
Agreed. Agreed. The real Apple Cup. A farewell to Shelly Hart, who's retiring from her role as Storm in-arena MC after this season. So Tuesday night, depending how the playoffs play out, we'll talk about that in a bit here, could have been her last game. She was honored during Fan Appreciation Night with a jersey celebrating her 17 years of service in the role,
Wow.
dating back to the Storm's inaugural season.
I remember when Shelly Hart came back to Cube, right?
Yes.
In the 90s.
I believe she's now on Warm 106.9. Also, one something I learned today. Shelly Hart is from Burien. Did you know that?
There we go.
I didn't find high school, but
I feel like Emmy winner, that's a Ballard thing. Local radio host, that's a South End thing.
it could also, I
We
mean,
know how
North
to see
End.
our own. Let's be honest with ourselves.
Eric Powers to the people is North End.
Is he
He
really? But
went to Nathan Hale, I'm pretty sure.
he's like North End. You know what I mean? He's not Ballard, he's North End.
I don't know what you mean, but yes.
But you know what I mean.
Yes, he did go to Nathan Hale. All right, lastly this week, a congrats to Andrew Tate and the Miss Madison racing team, which claimed the National High Points Championship during last weekend's APBA Gold Cup in San Diego, the season finale for H1 Unlimiteds. It's the second high points title for Tate, whose dad, Mark, won four, and Miss Madison's return to the championship after a one-year absence, giving them eight of the last 10 titles. In the final, Corey Peabody won the Gold Cup in the U9 Beacon Plumbing, his second Gold Cup win and second win this season.
All right.
Are you going to talk about Vegas food?
I don't know if I have any Vegas food to really talk about. I guess aside from Raising Cane's chicken. This was all the buzz. Apparently, the baseball bros really love Raising Cane's chicken. And there's a Raising Cane's in Las Vegas right next to where we were staying. And Luca was desperate to have it. I'd never had Raising Cane's before. And so it's just like, all right, I guess we're going there. It really reminded me of a Jan trip to Vegas, where it's like, instead of eating good food, I'm eating fucking Raising Cane's on the strip or whatever. And I was like, going to Vegas with children is basically the same as going to Vegas with Jan, because that's where you end up. I wouldn't say that I ate any good food along the way. We didn't go to In-N-Out because there was an argument between going to In-N-Out and Raising Cane's, and to the children, I just basically gave up because they were so annoyed about the idea of going to In-N-Out instead of Raising Cane's. And I went there, and it's basically just some kind of shitty chicken strips.
Oh no.
I mean, it's definitely worse than Popeyes. I think it's worse than KFC as far as corporate chicken strips. It's definitely worse than either of like the bigger local chicken strip places, or fried chicken places that have chicken strips. I was like eating it, and I was like, why am I here? What is this about? But the interesting thing about Raising Cane's is just how small their menu is. They only do chicken strips. I guess they do have a chicken sandwich, but it's not a fried chicken place. It is a strips place. And they've got coleslaw, they've got toast, and they've got fries. They got nothing else. That's the
Wow.
menu.
Huh. That's wild. Raising Cane's looking opening two locations, three locations in the Seattle area soon, including one in Renton. I believe those are expected to open in 2025.
I think it's going into the old Sonic in Renton, which is right by the Popeyes. And there might be a big chicken off there. But I'm just like, Popeyes is way better in every single way. Why are we even doing this? Why are we here, people? That was my only perspective, but I was bullied into going to Raising Cane's.
All right, let's talk about NBA expansion because, along with my ESPN colleagues, Tim Bontemps and Brian Windhorst, I was part of our FAQ about this earlier this week that included some new reporting about the situation in Seattle. I think, kind of the general details are along the lines of what we've talked about in the past. The NBA is very likely to expand. That process may not go as quickly as we in Seattle hope that it would. It does seem like 2027-28 is the most likely season for two expansions to come online,
To
teams to come
start playing
online.
would be 27, 28.
Correct. And very likely those will be Las Vegas and Seattle, although outside chance of Mexico City.
Instead of where?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, when you say outside chance of Mexico City, that has to preempt somebody else. It's not three teams might be joining the league.
Presumably not. Although Adam
Okay.
Silver did leave the door open to a number other than two when he
Okay.
broached this possibility at Summer League.
My general perspective is that obviously Seattle and Vegas are the most likely ones. I think that the NBA would obviously like to get to Mexico City. Infrastructure wise, though, it's just going to take longer. Having a team in a country like Mexico, it's going to take a second longer than it will take where it's basically like, Seattle is almost turnkey as far as having a team here. And I think that that ease is going to make things a lot easier.
And Vegas could be as well, although there are multiple other NBA, potential NBA arenas scheduled in the Strip area in addition to T-Mobile Arena that currently exists. The Kraken, we reported, are preparing for a bid here that will include, be led by Samantha Holloway, who's the, considered the primary owner now. She's the representative for the Kraken on the Board of Governors, replacing her father, founding owner David Bonderman, and including some other members potentially of the Kraken ownership group. One of the things we reported in here is that Rick Welts, who is a Seattle native, started his career with the Sonics, was a ball boy, then worked for the team in PR during the 79 championship. Went to the league office for many years, was responsible for the creation of All-Star Weekend. That was, something that he pitched to David Stern, or this might have been before David Stern took over as commissioner. Might have still been Walter Kennedy, but in that era. And then later went on to be team president for the Suns, was CEO of the Warriors before he retired a couple of years ago after leading them into the Chase Center, is in the Hall of Fame. So certainly an NBA heavy hitter, someone who's well connected to the league office, is helping advise them. Also importantly, we did some reporting on the situation on in terms of history, because you'll recall that the agreement between the city of Seattle and the Oklahoma City ownership group that allowed them to get out of the lease and move stipulated that there would potentially be shared history between the two teams. But the Thunder Media Guide doesn't refer to Seattle area history at all. And somewhat unsurprisingly, we were told that if the NBA returns, that they would be able to reclaim the Sonics history and Oklahoma City would not claim it going forward.
Which makes sense. I saw that and I thought that was kind of a little funny that it was a news story. Oklahoma City doesn't need the Sonics history.
They don't. They have their own history now. I think it's even a different situation than it was in 2008, but it was nice to sort of have that confirmation. And that was definitely kind of the buzziest part. The other piece we reported on the Seattle part of things is that Chris Hansen, who obviously was leading the group that attempted to purchase the Kings and move them here, is no longer at this point expected to lead a bid for a team. So we'll see if any other groups emerge besides the Kraken ownership group, but Chris Hansen not in position to lead one at this point.
And I think that makes sense. I mean, the Kraken ownership group is the obvious group. The second that this new arena opened, that Climate Pledge Arena opened, and that it was, the Kraken came to town, it just made sense that this was going to be the ownership group. They have the building. Again, they have the infrastructure, and it makes it as simple as possible for the NBA. You don't want to leave any holes open. You don't want to leave any question marks open. They've run a franchise, and they've run a franchise successfully with the Kraken. They've also unveiled a new franchise successfully with the Kraken. So it's something that they could go to the NBA with that experience. It's a bigger deal to have an NBA franchise than a hockey franchise, but they've done it before and they know how to do it. They did it very successfully with the Kraken. They built the hype appropriately and they've sold the season tickets. So
Now, did you look at the mock draft that the mock expansion draft that Tim Bontemps and I did? That'll be on the Hoop Collective podcast later this week.
I did look at the mock draft that let me pull this up here right now. So you're projecting into the future.
We're projecting as if we were doing it at the end of the 2024-25 season, but using current rosters.
It's kind of incredible that you took the time to do this.
It's actually remarkably the second mock expansion draft I've participated in during my time at ESPN, because we did this back in, I want to say, 2014.
But did you do, oh, you did it just blind 2014 without a new team?
I mean, we did it just to show what the hypothetical would look like if you added two teams.
Okay. All right. So walk me through this with the first pick. the Sonics, as we're calling them at the time, take an Oklahoma City player.
Yeah, I went to Oklahoma City because they, and this will probably be true even by 2027, but certainly true if we did it in 2025, have too many good players to protect between their recent draft picks and their playoff core. So in exchange for not taking Nikola Topic, who they took in the lottery last year, I got their best first round pick in 2025, which would probably be a lottery pick, and then also took Jalen Williams, big Jalen Williams, the center out of Arkansas.
Seems like a
Then
good pick to me. I mean, I.
Bontemps took my beloved Johnny Furphy.
Oh, he stole Firthy from you.
I did.
Has he been on a players to watch list?
He will be soon. We haven't done a players to watch list since he got drafted, but
Oh, Firthy
you
is
can write
coming.
Furphy down. You can put him in pen.
He's a foreign player, kind of a funny name. You know what's coming on this list
I mean, we're
in less
probably
than
going
a
to put
month.
Reed Sheffert, even though he's not foreign and not obscure. He
You
just
do
has to
love
be
Reed
on here.
Sheffert.
All right, so my next pick, I took Miles McBride from the Knicks. Really good contract as a backup point guard who can maybe start a little bit. Then was able to get Tumani Kamara from the Blazers after he started a fair bit for them as a rookie on a minimum
Yeah, I kind of liked him
contract.
last year. Yeah.
Yeah, Blazers, another team that had a lot of guys to protect, although I would have protected Kamara if I had been running the Blazers.
I'm still just in awe that this is a thing you did.
I mean, kudos to Bobby Marks. He did the work of doing the protected list for all 30 teams, which I had to do last time, or at least help with. Then got Colin Sexton from the Jazz to be kind of a leading scorer, microwave offense, someone who scores more efficiently than he used to. I had targeted him pretty high. I tried to start making some trades there with the Bulls to take on Zach LaVine or Nikola Vucevic, but they weren't interested, or the Warriors with Andrew Wiggins, but also not
Who was the
interested.
GM of these teams? Is it Bobby
Bobby
Marks?
ran all these other teams.
Okay. I love the idea of a mock expansion draft and not making a trade. Just like he just did nothing then ultimately.
What do you mean?
Well, like I it's not like the season happens. His only role is to reject a trade.
Well, you'd come off the
Right?
projected list.
Right, I know, but I'm saying when you proposed a trade to him, that was it, and he just rejected it. It's not like he doesn't get anything.
He made a lot of trades with Bontemps, but only the one with me. Next up, I took Kyle Kuzma. Another guy is a good scorer for an expansion team, but also I think very tradable. Then got Colby Jones from Sacramento, who was a high second round pick last year. I took Harrison Barnes. He's kind of the my Kurt Thomas, where he'd be a veteran leader for the first half of the season, and maybe you could trade him for value as an expiring contract at the deadline. And then we get into somewhat more obscure players.
I was going
Craig.
to say, this definitely showed me how few NBA players I know.
I mean, expansion draft territory. Craig Porter Jr., who was a pretty good undrafted rookie last year. B-ball Paul Reed from the Pistons, who could be a starting center. AJ Green from the Bucks, Adem Bona out of UCLA from the Sixers. Quentin Grimes I took as a restricted free agent, so I'd have to re-sign him as a free agent. And then Tim took Bronny James after unsuccessfully attempting to get the Lakers to trade him second-round picks to not take Bronny James.
I mean, I get it in Vegas. Maybe the Lakers would want Bronny there, but
Well, maybe Braun would want Bronny there.
yeah. Well, that's who the Lakers are.
Yes.
If there's the Lakers have less of an interest in Bronny James than LeBron does.
Agreed.
Okay, and you rounded out your draft with.
We probably don't need to go over Gui Santos, Antonio Reeves, and Zaire Williams as a restricted free agent.
It seems like a great draft. Nice one.
Thanks.
I can't wait to learn who these players are. Most importantly, getting a first round pick back from the Thunder would be nice. If a team did, you said it was 27, 28 would be the hypothetical first year. Do they then enter the lottery or are they assigned?
They're assigned picks historically. So Charlotte last time got the fourth pick. Before that, Toronto and Vancouver picked sixth and seventh. And the team that picked first in the expansion draft got the second of those picks.
Okay, so it'll probably be somewhere around there.
I would guess so. I'd say fifth and sixth, because now that the lottery is four teams, fifth and sixth makes sense.
And then with expansion, the teams that are eligible for the lottery will grow by two.
Correct. It'd be half the teams would make the playoffs then.
I look forward to when this is a reality and we can watch the actual expansion draft.
I'm going to spend so much time on it.
Mock expansion. There's going to be
I
an ESPN, like
love
the mock draft lobby, ESPN
expansion
mock
drafts.
expansion draft lobby.
I love expansion drafts more than anybody. And if it was one involving the Sonics, oh boy. Well, one Seattle area sports team we know will not be involved in something, almost certainly. It's going to be the Mariners. His playoff odds were cut by more than half after a like very positive weekend wherein the city connects from taking 3 in a row from the Rangers, thumped 11-2 by the Yankees on Monday night. And now that was a reality check.
A reality check for what? Their playoff odds were at like 6% before then. Come
No, they were
on.
at like 11 going into the day.
Were they really?
Yeah, they were double digits. So.
It wasn't just that loss. It was the combination of that loss plus basically everybody else winning.
Correct. But also the fact that they lost. It's not that it's just that they lost to the Yankees, that they lost 11-2. And I like that the focus afterwards was almost exclusively about Victor Robles attempting to steal home with the bases loaded, as if that one run would have erased all 11 the Yankees scored.
I see. I feel. I don't know. I turned on the game right after that happened, so I didn't understand the situation quite as well. I do feel like games can kind of get away from you, though. And maybe had he not, and they scored more runs, they were already down 2-0 in the top of the first. Like, there's probably a reality that Victor Robles aside, they probably weren't going to win the game.
Weirdly, a
The
lot of games have gotten away from the Yankees' opponents this season. Fun fact.
That's why I'm so shocked that the playoff odds were that high because, like, the Fangraphs knows that they were playing the Yankees. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, they were within two in the wild card at that point.
The Yankees are a good team.
It is true.
That's my takeaway. They are second in all of baseball in run differential. We'll see. See, when you're like, I'm not willing to fully give up hope, but I think if
Oh.
the Mariners lose a single more game, we're recording this before they play
Well, they
tonight for
probably
the
have to
first
go
time
9-2
ever.
is the expectation.
I saw the chart that Zach O, I believe, posted on the Discord, which if you're not on the
Correct.
Discord, what even are you doing? But
Many more people are joining the Discord.
are they really?
Yeah. Well,
Ooh.
not more people. Maybe not many more people.
Actually, I take that back. I don't like the attention. There might be too many more people.
Do you have
Wow.
attention?
No. Just I'm just taking it back after saying that people aren't on there.
Okay.
But not on me. I did. It was so funny earlier today. I asked if people ever get mad at their sibling on when a sports thing happens. Because again, if something bad happens sports-wise, the chances of you and I fighting about it and blaming the other one for that loss are
Oh,
100%.
110.
Like Jed Fish is like, there was going to be an incomplete pass to Giles Jackson. If the Huskies lose, I'm going to be mad at you. And I spent all day today, September 18th, many days after the Apple Cup happening, stewing at you about the Apple Cup.
I
Why?
don't unclear why.
Because I felt like you were going to say it was my fault and my undue confidence that they lost the game. And so I was preemptively mad at you and had the take in my head about the Huskies being better and was so ready to fight with you about it. Anyway, but after seeing basically like what their record needs to be, if they lose a single game, I'm going to be mostly out. If they lose two games, we're done for good.
That's about
And the Mariners should basically just close up shop and start playing young players.
And we're turning the corner to a new season. Obviously, football has started. Kraken training camp starts on Thursday. Things are happening, but still going strong, as always. The MLS regular season,
Oh, God.
where the Sounders got a 2-0 win Sunday against Sporting Kansas City. A Jackson Reagan rebound score put them on the board in the 19th minute after Jordan Morris was called back by VAR. Pauly Rothrock got the Sounders back up 2-0 in the 40th minute, and they completed the clean sheet as Stephen Fry returned to goal, allowing just two shots on goal. It's the 113th career clean sheet for Fry, giving him sole possession of second place in MLS history. They are still fifth in the West in 6 points per match, but closing the gap on a top four seed entering Wednesday night, when also just after we record this, they host San Jose before a 10-day break. The Lowly Earthquakes, the only MLS team eliminated from playoff contention. Seattle Reign FC saw their three-game winning streak come to an end at home on Sunday night in a rematch of the NWSL Cup final. Gotham City took the lead in the 41st, then finished the game off with an Estera strike that Claudia Dickey couldn't handle in the 85th minute. Reign played without Jess Fishlock due to the leg injury that forced her to leave the win at Angel City, as well as Jordan Heidema due to illness. The Reign also played Monday without longtime starting right back and leader in minutes played Sofia Huerta, who went on loan to former Reign parent club Olympique Lyonnais through next June. That move was sparked by Huerta's interest to play in elsewhere, per the Reign. So an opportunity to play in Champions League and in the top flight in France. Defender Lily Woodham also went on loan to Crystal Palace, although she'd played sparingly this season, not appearing in a regular season match since the Olympic break. Big opportunity for the Reign to get back on the winning track Saturday in Houston against the last place Dash, who are just 1-5-4 this season at home and having minus 19 goal differential in 20 matches. Seattle Storm. The regular season ends Thursday night, and we know now that the Storm will be the number five seed after they lost to the Las Vegas Aces on Tuesday night, a game much like their win on Sunday, narrow win on Sunday over the Los Angeles Sparks, that they played without both Ezi Magbegor due to a concussion and Jewel Lloyd due to a knee injury. Behind Skylar Diggins-Smith and Neko Gumeke, the Storm were in this one at the start of the fourth quarter, actually took the lead at one point after trailing big in the first half. But then Las Vegas shifted to a zone down the stretch and was able to stifle the Storm. We kind of saw the talent differential play out sort of as expected without two of the Storm's top core four on the court. You were watching this one and had some takes.
Did I have takes? I didn't really have takes.
You had
I
an
just didn't feel
officiating
like
take at least.
no, it wasn't an officiating take. It was just Skylar Diggins-Smith was getting into it with which was the Aces player.
I'm not even sure what this. Oh, who was she going? Kelsey Plum was who she was going back and forth with, right?
No, it was somebody else who kind of got up in Skylar's face after she made a shot, and I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was tech worthy or anything. That was it. That
Gotcha.
was the only take I had. I mean, basically they just made more shots, you know, like. That's ultimately what it came down to, is the Storm didn't hit the shots that they took.
Well, this could be an issue if these two teams play each other in the playoffs, which is looking somewhat likely.
What is health-wise, though? What would that look like?
Okay, so Jewel Lloyd is listed as questionable for the season finale Thursday in Phoenix against the Mercury. We'll see if she plays, but Noelis Quinn said the
No
mindset is
reason
to
to play, though,
be
right?
professional and play the game normally to maintain rhythm. And she also has said before the game that Lloyd would have played Tuesday if it was a playoff game, saying, "I feel comfortable with where she is, but just being mindful of her health." So we'll see. Ezi Magbegor is out, but the Storm also hope to have her back by Sunday as she
Okay.
gets through concussion protocol.
So most likely they'll be at full health.
It's sounding better. Thursday, by the way, also could be Diana Taurasi's final WNBA game. She has not announced her plans yet for beyond this season.
Interesting.
So it's almost certainly going to be Vegas in the first round. The Aces could move up to third, but only if Connecticut loses at home to a Chicago team that played without both Kennedy Carter and Camila Cardoso in a must-win game Tuesday in Atlanta. Seems to have accepted its lottery fate, let's say. And then the Aces for their final game listed all of their stars as doubtful due to rest, meaning they will. Presumably, they will play if there's an opportunity to finish third, and otherwise, they'll all sit out.
Okay.
The Storm will have the best winning percentage for a team that does not have home court advantage in the WNBA playoffs since 2002.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I think like people are like kind of disappointed about things in part because they're the fifth seed and likely facing the two-time defending champs in the first round. And part of it is just this has been an unusually top-heavy season in the W.
I mean, yes, but I think we kind of knew that it's a top-heavy league right now.
We knew that New York and Vegas were going to be top heavy. I mean, no one thought that Minnesota and Connecticut were going to be this good coming into the season.
I think
Frankly,
you were on Connecticut, right?
I was on them as the most likely team to finish third, but they've won more games than I expected. Because I mean, the Storm ended up with about the record I expected.
It's just been a harder league.
Yeah. Like it's just if they were fourth and playing, you know, like last year, the first round 4-5 matchup, I think was Dallas and Atlanta, both of whom may be in the lottery now, although Atlanta is very likely to make the playoffs as the 8 seed with a losing record. But like if it was a team of that level, the Storm were hosting in the first round, like, yeah, you'd feel likely you were going to get to the semifinals and play either Vegas or New York, and hey, let's see what happens from there.
And that's a 5-game series, right?
Yeah. Whereas the
They need to
three-game
go to
series,
longer series. 3-game series is not good.
it's especially a bad setup now because the way they're doing it, and I think this will almost certainly change next year with the charter flights, even though they already do charter in the playoffs. The first two games are at the higher seed. So both Sunday and then probably Tuesday or potentially Wednesday will be in Vegas. And only if the Storm win one of those two games and force a deciding game three, would that game be played in Seattle? Probably Thursday because there's a some sort of an event on Friday. I think a Kraken preseason game.
Why? I mean, they're literally just giving away money by not doing this.
Well, Vegas's crowds are going to be pretty good too. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be especially frustrating. Like, I think the Storm will push this change in particular if you won 25 games and didn't get a home playoff game. Like, that's.
I'm saying giving away money because it should be a 5-game series,
Oh,
not the
I see what you're
structure of
saying.
it.
I
It should be a
mean,
5-game first round series.
the one thing I will tell you is historically in the WNBA, playoff games are not as good financially relative to regular season games as you might think.
Fair
Like, you
enough.
don't have the
It's a
opportunity to
it is a
pre-sell group tickets.
different
And
WNBA.
I agree. And again, I think this change, I
They
think
should have
that,
made this change this season. They shouldn't have waited. They should have made the change this season in
well, this year
anticipation of
was
is
hard with the
Caitlin Clark is
Olympics.
in the playoffs, right?
She is in the playoffs. They'll be the 6 seed and
So,
likely face Connecticut.
I mean, the obviously those tickets will sell well in Connecticut, but there's a chance that Caitlin Clark doesn't play a home game in the playoffs.
Correct.
And
I guess, yeah,
I am very confident that those tickets would sell well.
So you could just go to the 1-1-1, but I do think they will probably look at
Play
going to a
five
best of
games.
five next year.
Why not? 5 games is already short. When the NBA plays seven through the entire playoffs, I mean, I think the NBA first round is probably that's pretty good though, sometimes.
I always liked Bill Barnwell's. I mean, it would never happen, but Bill Barnwell's idea that you have to earn a fourth game by winning one of the first three. Like you could
Yeah, no,
sweep 3-0.
that kind of makes sense to me.
So the Aces won the season series 3-1. They swept both matchups in Seattle and went 3-0 after Chelsea Gray returned to the lineup. They've also won 8 of their last 9 games, and the only loss in that span came without A'ja Wilson due to an ankle injury. And the most notable thing from the season series head-to-head, the three wins, Las Vegas outscored the Storm 66-27 beyond the arc, including 27-6 on Tuesday.
They're just not going to win the series. I mean,
It would be very surprising. But I mean, if they can pull off an upset in Vegas, then you sort of become the favorite because you get home court advantage.
that's another reason that it sucks,
I
the
agree.
structure. Yeah, you get the deciding game at home. Why do they do? Cool. Cool setup, guys.
You know, as I've said before, there's always a reason. It's just not necessarily a good reason.
I mean, the reason is a travel issue, I suppose. But
Yes.
yeah, if you lose a single game, then you become it's almost like a huge negative for you.
Yeah, I mean, there is the incentive to sweep, where, you know, like it does give a lot of benefit to teams for taking care of business at home because then they don't have to travel at all.
Are teams trying not to sweep, though?
No, but I'm saying
Do you need incentive to sweep?
I do like that it rewards teams for sweeping because they don't have to get on a plane whatsoever, is what I'm saying.
Sure, but it disrewards teams for being good in the regular season.
I don't think it does. I think you'd still take this setup, certainly. And the Storm were on the other side of this in 2022, 2 years ago. The previous team that had the best record without home court advantage since 2002 was the Mystics. That year is the 5 seed. Storm, I think, were 1 game ahead of them, maybe 2 in the standings, and swept the first two, and Washington was done.
Yeah.
But it also, because it's a best of three, like your season ends like that.
Yeah, it's abrupt. I don't agree with the setup. I think the most likely outcome is obviously hearing what you're saying is that the Storm are done playing basketball in Seattle this year.
I did have that thought on Tuesday night as I was going to the game that like, oh, this is probably going to be the last time. And it came early.
And if they do play another home game, the stakes are going to be very high.
Oh yeah, it's going to
So
be thrilling.
I mean, it'll be
And
really fun, but just to get there is the difficult part. The first two games aren't going to be that much fun, but if they win it, then all of a sudden it's going to be a very fun game.
correct.
So I suppose we hope that it happens.
Indeed, we do.
All right, let's look ahead to
this weekend of football, starting Saturday, when the Huskies will be back in the familiar confines of Husky Stadium. You will no longer be upset about being at Lumen Field and won't be on Sunday when you're there either.
Oh, you don't know. You don't know that.
Well,
You
but
don't know. You don't know my capability to be mad about things.
fair. But you won't be upset
Also,
about being at Lumen Field.
I have to. Well, I've been upset about being at Lumen Field during Seahawks games before. Don't get me
But not
wrong.
because it's at Lumen Field. You're not like, oh man, I wish this game had been played at
Oh,
Husky Stadium
Thanksgiving
instead.
night, Steve Aoki's playing. Who could be upset about being here?
Again, that's not the point. It's not the venue you're upset about.
I just also need to note the Mariners, I believe, have just started, but hope is back on the menu, boys, after losses from the Twins and the
Oh, wow. The vibes are shifting as the pod goes.
Astros
I guess
today.
actually this is of a piece with your vibe throughout it, but we did take a bit of a break, and that was enough. I guess the Mariners have started now. I'll have to put the game cast at least on in the background.
If they lose, hope is off the menu again, boys. But no,
This
the
is like the
official.
Bear. The menu changes every night.
Have you watched that season yet, by the
I
way?
have found now finished that season just last week. We could
What did
talk
you
about
think?
it at some point. I liked it more than you did.
But did you also can admit the flaws, right?
I mean, it went far in a certain direction. I concede that.
It's all montages.
But I'm okay with that.
Permanent, you're okay with an all montage season?
I am.
If montages are good, why not make a whole show out of montages? All sap, all montages. The
If
Tina
montages are
episode in
good,
particular, I was just like literally
what?
watching it and I was like, I cannot make it through this.
Oh, this is the episode that was described in the Discord this past weekend is perhaps the best episode of television this season. But this season, alas, is
They just
2024-25 Emmys
did it
season. It
better.
was
They did
not
it better in
the
previous
episode.
seasons. The Marcus episode was better.
I don't dispute that that was better. Are you like, hey, the 2020 Storm Championship was best, so they shouldn't try to win any other championships?
It was so overly earnest this season. Anyway,
I agree that shows of this ilk tend to get more earnest as they go.
I'm just like, dog, the earnestness. Like, it's really hard to find the temperature of between like crass and earnest.
I
I don't know if
mean,
those are
I don't
opposites,
think
but
the exchange between a certain UW alum and a certain main character on the show in the final episode of the season was all that earnest.
even that
And let
didn't
me
like
tell you,
pay off though. I felt like that could have paid off even more. The first episode literally was just a montage, right?
it was, yes. Let me tell you,
Want more Joel McHale.
I would
Give
watch an
me
entire series built around Joel McHale's chef character
just being an asshole to people.
and telling them you're welcome for it.
I mean, it is funny sometimes where you're
Sorry, I had the spoilers on this one.
like you're not wrong, right? Like if this was a real life scenario, like if all you care about is the output, Joel McHale's not wrong. It's like me when you podcast with me. Look, the output is better than when you're on the Hoop Collective. You're welcome.
The viewer listenership numbers disagree.
Didn't say the quantity of people, but you never yell about things when you're on there. At no point are you screaming at each other with Tim Bontemps.
I have screamed at
Jalen
Tim.
Williams is mine!
I have screamed at Tim, but only on the phone, not on the podcast. He and Wendy do the screaming at each other on that podcast.
You're welcome.
Anyways, let's talk about the
Kickoff.
first Big Ten football game ever for the Huskies. Against Northwestern on Saturday. Sounds like Carson Bruner should be able to play this weekend, so that's some good news after he left the Apple Cup in the fourth quarter. Maybe one reason that you should not have been so confident about the Huskies' ability to stop Washington State on the ground on a final drive. Quentin Moore still doubtful to return from his injury. Decker DeGraff continuing to just prove himself to be
Quentin
that
who?
dude. I mean, look, there's a place for Quentin Moore here.
You're a
One of the
DeGraff
most
hunter
important
now.
One of the most important catches in program history, let's always
Yes.
remember.
Yes.
So Northwestern also went 2-1 in non-conference play, maybe not as strong a non-conference performance as UW's. They narrowly beaten Wyatt.
What about UW's not? I mean, I'm just being honest. This is the person who was overly confident, but like there were relatively like fine wins against Eastern Michigan and Weber
Well, let
State.
me tell you a little bit about Northwestern's
All right, fine,
non-conference.
it's fine.
They beat Miami of Ohio 13-6 in their season opener, then lost 26-20 in overtime to Duke with 288 yards of total offense.
Oh yeah.
After that game, they decided to make a quarterback change as fifth-year senior Mike Wright, who backed up Will Rogers at Mississippi State last year, was benched
Hello.
in favor of redshirt sophomore Jack Lausch, who had just three career pass attempts entering the game and will make his first road start on Saturday. Facing Eastern Illinois, Lausch went 20 of 31 for 227 yards with two touchdowns and no interception. Did also manage 62 yards on the ground as the Wildcats ran for 203 yards as a team, but it was pretty close for them against an FCS opponent in the first half.
Okay. It's not exactly a John Mateer situation. I don't have to sweat it.
I mean, look, appropriate fear. Northwestern's leading runner, but this is an easy, we're easing into Big Ten play, let's say. Northwestern's leading rusher Cam Porter has averaged 5.3 yards per carry this season, so he is a bit of a threat. Michigan transfer AJ Henning, their leading receiver with 19 catches for 170 yards, but averaging just 9.4 yards per catch, so this is not a real big play offense thus far. The Northwestern defense has forced five turnovers, allowed just 2.3 yards per carry, but the best offense they have faced in terms of FPI efficiency was Duke at 110th. So I think the UW and Will Rogers that 10 yards per attempt last Saturday is going to be a little different. Northwestern ranks 71st defensively in FPI efficiency. Offensively, they are also not as good at quite as good as Duke. They are 111th in FPI offensive efficiency this season.
I mean, I do we need to go super deep into this game? Because
We
I feel
don't. That
like
was it.
there's just a reality that ultimately we don't know that much about Northwestern. I don't know if we need to like really talk game plan and schemes and things like that. It's a good way to start Big Ten play against a team like Northwestern. The schedule is very front loaded. And
No, I
most
think
of
the schedule is
sport
very backloaded.
the amount of home games is very front loaded. That's what I should
True.
say. Because after this, there's only like two home games left.
No, there's more than that. There's two home games left after Michigan.
Okay. Michigan, USC,
UCLA.
and UCLA. Okay. But th this is a nice way to start Big Ten play against what might be the worst Big Ten team.
It's also
And
interesting. I don't think UW has ever played a conference rival with purple in their uniforms before, have they? I mean,
I mean,
I'd have to go back to the original history of the AIAW, but I think it was just Idaho is the only team that dropped out, right?
that's pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah,
Well,
that's
that'll be an interesting tidbit.
right.
We could basically only learn things about the Huskies in this game. And I think what we need to see and to rebound from last week is a real showing of accountability from Jed Fish.
Oh,
We need him at various times being complimented and apologizing to both the fans and the local media after each play. No, it would be nice to have a dominating victory again against a Big Ten team. I think that's what kind of needs to happen in this game is whether the Huskies win by 10 or 25 or more, controlling the game overall. And honestly, in a way that they didn't necessarily in either of the two non or
I
previous
mean, they
Wazoo
started
non-conference
slowly.
games.
I would say they controlled those games.
I think it would be nice to see the offense get going a little bit faster, and it would be nice to see them be just a hair more consistent because they've been a little bit streaky so far. And then also finishing series off with touchdowns. Those field goals, I mean, it's what lost them the game against Wazoo. The field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, right four in a row. It's what lost them the game. And people aren't talking enough about that. They're focusing in more on a couple of small plays, but Grady Gross also, by the way, nailed them all.
Oh yeah, Grady Gross, terrific.
But
Zero complaints. Just don't want to see him as busy, or see him
finishing
kick
off
you extra
those
points.
drives with touchdowns is going to be huge. I personally, you heard my feelings about the Wazoo game. It has not changed my perspective on the season at all. And It's good that it's a non-conference game. I like that it's the beginning of the year. You know, if that had happened and then all of a sudden, boom, the season's over, there's a bowl game after, that shit is devastating. And
Yes, many
losing to
people noted
what
that.
probably is, I'm just like, I couldn't even in the moment work up a healthy amount of hate for Wazoo, you know?
Oh, I could.
And you could, I'm just like,
Just when that many Cougs are gathered together in one place, you get
hate to see
enough
it.
fans of the same team in any place against my team. There's
You
gonna
could
be
work up a
some
healthy bit of
animosity.
hatred. Yeah. Well, I don't think we'll be seeing that with Northwestern. I don't, maybe not though. I like Northwestern fans may take this as an opportunity to travel.
It'll be interesting to see because there have been basically zero road fans at the first two games. Weirdly, Weber State and Eastern Michigan did not travel that well. By the way, Montana, of course, is the other long PCC member that I'm forgetting that did not join the AAW at U before the Pac-8, but
Or maroon.
they also do not wear purple. So, and it doesn't even appear any affiliate Pac-12 members have worn purple. So this could be a first. Could be a
Most wears
first.
purple throughout the country. LSU, East Carolina. There aren't that many schools.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Weber State.
I was kind of thinking of FBS schools, but
They are FBS. Oh no,
are
they're
they?
FCS. You're right. They're FCS. Never mind.
I'm sure there are others. Those are the only ones I can
Grand
think of.
Canyon is in the FCS. I don't think they don't even sponsor football, do they?
But yeah, no,
TCU.
oh yeah, TCU is a big one. I'm excited to see this team play again and to bounce back because it was a brutal loss that they had. Having another game at home, having an easier game at home. We're not going to know who this team is. I mean, if they lose one of these coming games, then we'll know something. We're not going to know who this team is until October 5th.
Rutgers might be legit, though. Let's not overlook that game. I'm excited for the fact that it's the first 4 p.m. start time of the season. As you know, people think that 12:30 is the right start time, and that's because they apparently don't tailgate. Like sports writers will say this because they don't. No, 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. is the best start time. So, I'm looking forward to that.
Rutgers might be legit.
Percentage chances of victory?
80%.
I'm actually more confident. 85. That's strange. Rutgers 47th in FPI. They are 2-0 this season.
They played Howard and Akron. They've got they put they go at Virginia Tech this weekend, and that's one. Who's their other non-conference game? Did they not play one? Oh, Virginia Tech this weekend.
Yes, I was gonna chime in with that at some point here.
I was thinking that we were playing them this weekend. But kind of a strange schedule for Rutgers so far.
I agree. All right.
Huzzers
Well, it's
home.
been an interesting schedule for the Seahawks, who, as we mentioned, have played two of the teams with the lowest projections coming into the season. And week three was when it was supposed to start to get real with the arrival of the Miami Dolphins. But the Tua Tagovailoa injury has sort of changed that, with the Seahawks again being healthy favorites in this one, although not as healthy favorites as they were at start. They opened as 6.5 point favorites and now bet down to Seahawks -4 in this one.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened that would change it 2.5 points?
Maybe the Snoop Huntley news that he's joining the Dolphins practice squad. I didn't do a lot of notes on Tyler Huntley because I didn't anticipate that he's going to play this weekend, but he would probably be a better option than Skylar Thompson.
I mean, I've always liked Tyler Huntley, but you know, coming in and 1 week and leading that team, and he's also still Tyler Huntley.
He has never played for a thrown a pass for a team besides the Ravens.
I mean, he started 20 games in his career, a bit of a rushing threat.
He's played 20 games. He started 9, for the record.
Oh, interesting. Just coming in as backup.
It
A
is
lot of
Pro
sacks
Bowler,
back in
you'll recall,
2021.
Pro Bowler Tyler Huntley.
55 QBR in 2021, which also, like, QBR is pretty set to like Tyler Huntley. Did UW play him? Did he start the Pac-12 championship that we played against them? No, that was that him?
That's a great
Was that
question.
somehow still Cam Rising?
I don't believe that was Camp Rising. That was the 2018 season or 2019? 2019? No, 2018. So he might have been injured for that one.
Oh, I think that was it. And they were kind of
Yeah,
running
he
on
was
like
out
a
for the
shell.
season by that point. We did
Yeah.
play lose to, or we did beat Tyler Huntley, I should say, in September of that season
Matt Gay was
in
their
Salt
kicker.
Lake
I had no
City.
idea. 10-3. What a wild game. Yeah, Jason Shelley was starting. I do not even remember this player.
I think he was like an even more run first quarterback than Tyler Huntley is.
That does not change my perspective about the game. I think 6.5 points is the right spread for this one. So I'm surprised to see that bet down, especially when you look at how DVOA and Dave viewed the Seahawks so far. And this is a, you know, it's a very talented Dolphins team, but without they're a specifically designed Dolphins team to play with Tua. I think what will be interesting is
I don't know if I necessarily buy that, but I think
is
they
Skylar
really.
Thompson going to be able to get the ball downfield to Tyreek Hill in the way that Tua can?
Well, that's
Like,
interesting because I don't think that's actually necessarily the issue if you look into the dig into the numbers, which I have done.
what is the, okay, let's hear.
Well, let's start with, so the Dolphins, it's been a strange season for them. They trailed the Jaguars 17-7 in the late third quarter of their opener, but then scored 13 points unanswered to win on a Jason Sanders field goal at the buzzer, dominating that one in terms of yards. But then they were down 31-10 in the late third quarter to Buffalo on last Thursday night when Tagovailoa suffered the third career concussion, scrambling on a fourth down conversion. That put Skylar Thompson in the game, and the game that neither team scored thereafter. The Dolphins have announced Mike McDaniel. It's, by the way, it's the Mike McDee Bowl. Did you think about
Yep.
that? Mike McDaniel versus Mike McDonald. Don't call them the playoffs or call him Mike McDaniels. Has said that Skylar Thompson will start this week, despite the addition of Huntley. So Thompson started two games in 22. During those Tagovailoa concussions, and then played, it actually might not have been the concussion, I'm not sure on that, and then played extensively in relief in two others, beating the Jets in the season finale. He completed 57% of his passes overall for just 5.1 yards per attempt with a 29 QBR and was 8 of 8, 14 for 80 yards last Thursday. But interesting, one of the things that the Seattle media noted Mike McDonald pointed out on Wednesday is that Thompson doesn't get the ball out as quickly as Tagovailoa does,
Got it.
and he averaged 3.5 yards after catch per completion in 2022, according to PFR advanced stats, as compared to 4.9 for Tagovailoa, although his intended air yards were also somewhat lower than Tagovailoa's.
Yeah, I'm just seeing these Skylar Thompson stats. I mean, you know, having a backup quarterback who started a playoff game is definitely nice, but has not really been effective at any point in his career. I mean, he's sitting on like at 57% completion percentage in 2022 when he was playing, 5.1 yards per attempt, three picks to a touchdown, and you know, not much of a threat on the ground. I'm not sure what Skylar Thompson does.
What is it you
I
would
mean,
say you do here?
right? I mean, that's kind of, you know, figure out what you do. Like, that's kind of what Skylar Thompson is right now. He's a backup quarterback. That is kind of at its base level, and he's not a super experienced backup quarterback. The Dolphins are not a situation where, I mean, again, we'll see what happens with Huntley, but that's not going to be a factor for the Seahawks this weekend, primarily. It'll be a, if they are able to score points in this game, it will be a very impressive feat by Mike McDaniel.
I agree. I mean, there are still a lot of weapons, as you mentioned. Tyreek Hill had seven catches for 130 yards against Jacksonville, and including an 80-yard touchdown, was limited to 24 yards by the Bills. Jaylen Waddle has only been targeted nine times through two games, but is averaging 6.7 yards per target, having caught all of them. And then with
Six point
OB,
seven yards, 6.7 yards.
16.7.
Okay, I was gonna say that's terrible. Okay.
16. Yeah. No, good number. But there's not a lot of depth behind them in the wide receiver room. That was why I was making that point earlier about the three wide receivers versus the two for the Seahawks. They thought that Odell Beckham Jr. was going to be that guy. He's still out after offseason surgery. And one of the guys in their rotation is Robbie Chosen, who you recall worked out for the Seahawks this offseason and was signed as a street free agent late in training camp by the Dolphins. So. You know, I think that certainly is something, especially for a team that is able to you know, potentially match up Devin Witherspoon and Reek Woolen a lot of the time on Hill and Waddle. Like that's exciting for the Seahawks.
I mean, they have no other receiver with more than a reception besides Hill and Waddle. I just do not see it in this game.
Well,
If
the
two is
guy,
there, it's radically different, but yes.
who I'm scared of in this situation is Devon Achane, who has been their breakout star after a promising rookie season. He's carried the rushing load with 120 yards through two games, but has 145 receiving yards in a TD. Usually, running back targets are very inefficient in terms of yards per target. Achane is averaging 10.4 yards per target this season, which is very good for any receiver. Just that's despite an ankle injury that left him questionable for last Thursday's game when he did play. Raheem Mostert, who missed that game, still not practicing due to a chest injury. We haven't yet seen much of rookie Jalen Wright, who has 5 carries for 4 yards. So if you were hoping for him to be your fantasy breakout, gonna have to keep waiting.
I have many players I'm still waiting on. it's coming. Jonathan Brooks, when he's healthy, just wait. Just
Oh,
wait.
you think you're counting on Jonathan Brooks?
And I count on somebody now that Cooper Kupp and AJ Brown are out.
I've got him in both leagues, but I think that Marshawn Lloyd picks did not have not yet yielded dividends.
it's we're playing the long game here. But it's not been super effective
You
at
know who's not playing the long game? The team that's handing Josh Jacobs the ball 35 times a game.
No, and so that was the thing. I actually felt like the game plan that the Packers employed, this is obviously a worse Colts team, and Anthony Richardson was bad in that game. Skylar Thompson is different than Malik Willis, though, as a quarterback. And, I thought it was a very impressive game plan that Matt LaFleur employed for that one. That's just, it's not Skylar Thompson's game.
Well, the other thing though is like their offensive line was, very effective in terms of moving the ball with Josh Jacobs. That has not necessarily been the Dolphins' strength, although I think their pass rush or their run block win rate is actually pretty good.
Then why is Achane at 3.8 yards per carry? I mean,
I mean, it's a pretty small sample size right now.
I guess so. It's still 30 carries. It's not like it's 10. You
That's
have,
a very small sample size.
and Mostert hasn't gotten basically anything going. I just, again, for this team going against the Seahawks, like, yes, Achane is a receiver. He'll make some plays, but this is what they're good at bottling up. And or it seems so far, and they've gotten obviously very lucky to play, in back-to-back-to-back weeks, Bo Nix, Jacoby Brissett, and then Skylar Thompson. But things are obviously going to get harder past this. But I would be very surprised if the Dolphins offensively scored more than 14 points in this game. And it really comes down to can the Seahawks score against them, which people have been able to so far.
Yeah, I mean, they're 28th in defensive DVOA thus far. So they had a bit of an offseason defensive makeover. They let Vic Fangio leave after one season as DC to go to, he's in Philadelphia, right? They hired, and this is an interesting thing I don't think I've heard a lot about this week, Mike McDonald's former protege, Anthony Weaver, someone we, would have talked about as a defensive coordinator candidate in Seattle, is one of the several McDonald position coaches who got defensive coordinator jobs elsewhere this season. So he's taking over that it took over there. They lost Christian Wilkins, who signed with the Raiders. They effectively traded linebackers with the Seahawks. They waived Jerome Baker and signed Jordan Brooks. They waived Xavien Howard. They added Kendall Fuller and Jordan Poyer in the secondary. And then notably, Brandon Chubb is still on PUP rehabbing the ACL tear that ended his season last year.
Bradley Chubb.
That's weird. I don't know why I wrote that down as Brandon. And yeah, they just have not been very good this season. Buffalo was able to march up and down the field on Thursday night.
Yeah, and you look at the stats for Buffalo, they weren't, I mean, the 5.5 yards per play was pretty solid, but nothing really stands out. I mean, Josh Allen was only at 139 yards, and James Cook had a couple of big plays. I think Geno is going to have a better game against them than like Josh Allen had in that one. And it really comes down to they just forced a bunch of turnovers that Tua made. Obviously, he's not going to be starting in this game, but I could see Skylar Thompson doing something similar and the Seahawks just being in good positions. So if it's three and outs, if it's turnovers, starting with the ball, I'm guessing that their average starting position is going to be significantly better in this game than Miami's is. And that's going to be a thing that matters in this game. There might be a moment where we're frustrated with Mike McDonald for not going for a fourth down or something like that. And I think this might be one of those games similar to the Ravens games that we talked about last year, which also noting the Ravens defense did not look great so far. There are losses on that defense, but Mike McDonald definitely seems like a factor. And he's going to try to not do too much in this game.
I think
I
that's
think
probably
that.
the right approach, yeah. I mean, especially the other thing about field position, Miami has only forced one turnover through two games. That's part of why their defense ranks so poorly in DVOA, even with that yards per play situation. So you're saying basically go to the Steelers game plan
No,
from last
not
week at
that.
Denver and just try to run out the clock for an entire half?
No, I'm saying go win this game 31-6.
Oh, okay.
Like, let's just go fucking kick somebody's ass. And I think that could happen in this game. That's why I'm a little surprised that the spread. What are better seeing that? And maybe it's just that the Seahawks have played close in both these first two games, and people are looking too closely at the actual score and not enough at the underlying stats. And that's my guess is what's happening. But week one against Denver, I mean, they started out really slow, but it also required two safeties
It
and a
did.
muffed punt or a fumbled punt or whatever. Like the run of game made that game closer than it actually was. And I think, I don't know, I couldn't tell you for the Patriots game quite as much. I think basically
Yep.
just gave up some big plays, but
I mean, it was still good in terms of the post-game win expectancy from as part of DVOA.
right now, the Patriots are a better team than the Dolphins are.
I don't know if I'm willing to go that far.
With
But
Skylar Thompson as the quarterback, what is their record with Skylar Thompson as quarterback?
they won one of those games. I mean, they were 1-1 in his two starts during the regular season.
And then lost the playoff game. I think that the spread is not recognizing this one right, and I think the Seahawks are going to win by multiple touchdowns.
Multiple touchdowns.
I think they are going to win this game by 20 plus points. I don't think it's even going to be close, to be honest.
I'm
I mean, I
just
felt that
like,
way about the Apple Cup too, and
your undeserved confidence never wins.
but there's a difference in that Wazoo had shown things, right? Like we knew Wazoo. That
Yeah.
Texas Tech game, that was an ass kicking. Like Wazoo played well in that game.
They were frisky.
Wazoo had played better in the season so far in their two games than the Dolphins have. And the Dolphins are without their starting quarterback. And it's not a particularly lethal backup that they have. So
No,
I
I mean, I
don't.
think they have one of the weaker backups in the league.
I mean, I guarantee you, if it's Sam Howell on the other side, we'd be a lot more scared. So given
Percentage
those things,
chances of victory?
I think it's like 85%. It's an NFL
Oh
game.
boy.
I'm gonna lower that because NFL games are hard to win. But I think it's like 77%.
I'm gonna go 70%. I still have a certain healthy fear of the Dolphins' infrastructure, the possibility of Tyreek Hill or
The
Jalen Waddle.
Dolphins' infrastructure?
Yeah, in terms of the skill talent. I mean,
I.
Hill, Achane, Waddle is still one of the most dangerous trios in the NFL.
You have to get them the ball, though.
I mean,
And
there are ways to get guys the ball. It's going to be a challenge. And look, we've seen how they've done, but maybe Skylar Thompson is a better quarterback than we saw 2 years ago, because he does have all that experience you talked about. And
but
it's
he
also true
doesn't
that,
necessarily.
I mean, he has a lot of, practice reps, preseason reps, things like that he didn't have 2 years ago. And he also, like, the evidence shows that quarterbacks tend to play better when they have a week of practice before starting rather than coming on in relief. So I don't think that last week, especially, and kind of hopelessly behind is necessarily. But it would have been interesting to see what the spread on this game was if Tua was healthy, because again, with him, Miami was getting beaten pretty badly by Buffalo last week.
Yes, but I do think it's like a Seahawks minus like three, maybe something. I mean, if it's four right now with Skylar Thompson, 6.5 is the right place to be. I think it was like a Seahawks, maybe even less, like a 2.5 or something. But
I mean, based on this, I think it would have been either Dolphins pick 'em favorite or a pick 'em.
I'm a little confused by the spread, but the infrastructure, I'm not sure I buy
I mean,
overall.
they have the fastest guys in the league. Like, you're kind of discounting that too much.
I think that Mike McDonald's
I think
defense
the
is
I would
going to
put
be
it
able to
this way.
handle this.
I think the weapons deserve more credit for Tua playing as well the last few years as he did than Tua does, even though the difference losing Tua to Skylar Thompson is bigger than the difference would be from one of those guys to their backup.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I think Tua is probably a little bit underrated. I think you're underrating Tua a little bit.
Well, I
But
think
the
you're
other thing is,
underrating Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle and Devon Achane.
they're obviously good. Like, Tyreek Hill is obviously good. But what were his stats? I mean, he got a lot better. It's a little bit hard to tell, too, because.
Like pre-Patrick Mahomes? Is that what
No,
you're
no, no.
asking here?
No. Tua's stats.
Oh.
2022 was Tyreek Hill's first year there. He's played 2 seasons in Miami.
Yes. That
And
is
Tua's been an
correct.
all-pro both of those years. I mean, record-wise, he went from 7-5 to 8-5 to 11-6.
We were at Disneyland when Tyreek Hill got traded to the Dolphins, you'll recall.
I think that this is the kind of game that if Pete Carroll was still the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, they might lose. And with Mike McDonald, I think it's not even going to be close. So just seeing that, I'm like, I think Pete Carroll would find a way to mess this one up.
Well, the Saints coming in here. I guess that was Teddy Bridgewater. So that was a pretty good quarterback. But without Drew Brees at a very similar point in the season many years ago.
Or at least Skylar Thompson would have a hell of a game. And
True.
Mike McDaniel would be able to figure it out. But
They'd be up
against
two touchdowns, and then the Seahawks would work it back and win in overtime.
and maybe this is
Well,
premature praise for Mike McDonald, but
I
I
what
think
I
it's
would
going to
say is
shut Skylar Thompson down.
I'm optimistic, but I also don't think we know yet about Mike
Okay.
McDonald. He's coached two games.
Oh,
Let's
and I also the other thing is that with defensive coaches, I think it is easier for an offensive coach to be a good coach consistently year after year long term. For a defensive coach to have one thing that works really well, and I think Mike McDonald may be an outlier, but there's a chance that Mike McDonald is really good for a year and then not after that, or 2 years or something, that it fades over time. Right now, though, I don't think there's even enough necessarily out there for Mike McDaniel to find an exploit. And
I don't know if I go that far.
I have a lot of faith in the Seahawks defense
Yeah, we know.
this weekend.
We know.
So,
All right. Did I skip my percentage chances? I said 70%.
yes, you did.
Okay. Well, it'll be an interesting weekend of football.
I know, it's been so many home games. I feel like I've constantly been at football games.
That is correct.
I'm going to a show at Showbox Soto on Friday. And then the Huskies on Saturday and the Seahawks on Sunday. It's going to be a long one.
I'm sure it is. All right. On that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.
Well, I have some overarching thoughts
Why
on
you just
Vegas in
Vegas is a
general.
city? Okay,
Yeah,
well,
Vegas is a city. But my
maybe we'll
number
save
one
that for
thought
again.
is I literally, we were at the MGM Grand. I was floating around in a lazy river, watching NFL Red Zone on my phone. And I don't think life gets any better than that. I think that might be it. That might be
We've
the like,
peaked.
yeah, no, being able to watch NFL Red Zone while floating around in a lazy river the entire time in 95 degree heat in September is just like, doesn't get much better than this. Like, literally, as I was doing it, sometimes I'll have these thoughts where I'm just like, because, you know, like as a modern human being, I assume base level everything is bad. But every once in a while, I'll be like, you know what? Actually, life might be amazing. But the other thought that I had was watching NFL Red Zone throughout the weekend. The NFL is fucking amazing. Like, I don't just the entire time,
Well, I'm
there was
glad
a
you've
game,
discovered that
but
you've
I think
discovered the
people
most popular
underestimate
television program.
just how amazing, you know, like there's these internet bros, like NBA bros. Like, there's this, I was actually talking about this earlier today with Aramis, where there's like this tier of people who they say that they're sports fans, but actually they only care about the NBA and they actually only care about like the internet aspects of the NBA. No offense to NBA fans, but it is just like a far inferior sport and viewing experience. The
But
NFL, there is a
if
game
all you care
so
about
much.
is the, if you don't care about the viewing experience, why would the viewing experience matter?
I guess that's true.
NFL memes are not nearly as good as NBA memes.
Fine,
You have to
NBA
agree with
memes. Oh,
that.
okay. But it's like you don't
I
actually
was going
care
to
about
make a specific
sports.
reference to NFL memes, but I'll leave that to the listener to think about what troubling NFL memes I might be thinking of at the moment.
The Giants probably lost a game because their kicker was injured and they didn't have a backup kicker. So they scored a touchdown to go up three and then went for two. And I was like, I didn't know what was going on because I didn't have the sound on NFL Red
I
Zone.
missed all of this.
And they went for two up three because Graham Gano was hurt. The NFL is amazing. Just so much shit can happen every single week. Unlike your preordained NBA, where you know before the season who's going to win the championship. I don't, it's the, I, it is so much fun.
Yeah, that's why
I
you
really
picked
was
the
there.
Dallas Mavericks to be in the NBA Finals last season.
Oh, they let you pick. They give one wild card to who's going to play in the game, but we knew who was going to win.
I mean, I suppose the Celtics weren't actually the favorites going into the season. This we've already talked about a topic this relates to.
But it was
Listener,
just
the listener will know.
honestly, I feel like the NFL, the 2024 NFL season might be the best NFL season ever.
So you're saying the season where nobody can score any fucking points and all it is guys kicking field goals. That's the best season. They again peak. They can't get any better than this. Where everyone is playing cover two and there are no more exciting. I mean, there are still some exciting plays. You have takes. All takes, Tristan. That is a real all takes, Tristan kind of situation. You know, maybe have you considered the possibility is just that you happen to be in Las Vegas during this NFL season and you haven't been in Las Vegas during any previous NFL seasons to watch games on a Sunday? Did you consider that possibility? Okay, he's got to continue sending this work text.
Sorry. I have not considered that, but I have considered the NFL is amazing. Something horrible that happened though was I lost both the touchdown that the Falcons scored on Monday night because I was betting on football. I lost both the bet and my fantasy game on the Drake London touchdown.
Oh.
The Eagles kicked a field goal to go up six. I had Eagles minus 5.5, bless Mateo, and he lost me money. And I was just like, we're good. There's no way the Eagles are scoring this. And then they come downfield and did have the double whammy of losing my Champions League game plus losing my bet on that Drake London touchdown. That one really hurt. But still, after all of that, I'm just like, the NFL is amazing. I don't know. I am so freaking in.
Good for you.
Yeah. Okay.